Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, I think I'm actually organized today. I am genie enough to tell me what you think, but I'm really enjoying this this new format. We actually started last Thursday. I just extended the Thursday shows by a couple of hours, and now we're doing our official 3 hours time now, starting at 6 o'clock in the morning Central Time, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, and so it's kind of cool, and it gives us a chance to slow down a little bit, expand on some of the things we're doing, and which means there's even more to do. There's more stories, more things we can present. In fact, it's funny. I was just right before the show, about 15 minutes ago, I thought to myself, "Damn, I forgot to upload my new Santa Rosa Volunteers." So we have Anti-Federalist Number 5. I'll be presenting that at some point a little later today. I'm also finding the further I get away from this microphone, the better I sound on the air, because there's a lot of words that are lost. So I'm going to try this now. I'm back a bit. I can hear me just fine. I think this microphone is a lot more powerful than I thought originally. So that's kind of cool. Well, let's bring Jing on, our producer. I should almost call you co-host, because this is the way things are going, which is very cool. So I always appreciate you on the show and the invaluable help that you give to make this, even better, far better than it would be, just me on my own. Good morning, Jean. How you feeling?
Good morning. All right. I just want to talk to people, say a minute about the chat. Please, we love people to use the chat. However, don't just put talking points on there, because one, it's not a place for me to agree or disagree with what you're saying or try to defend what Greg says, or if I agree or if I disagree. But the thing is, don't say talking points, because bottom line is this: most of those we know are not true. And so if you've got some real reasons, let us know, because, hey, my mind can be changed if I know different facts. But if you just say talking points, like, I don't know how many times it was written yesterday, well, Biden won, Biden got more votes. But it's like, do you know what's going on? How did he get those votes? Dead people? How many people voted twice, if not three or four times? How many people voted that weren't in that, weren't from Maricopa County? How many people voted on ballots that they got more ballots in than they sent out? Right there, that should be a red flag. I don't care if they voted for Trump or Biden. We'll never know that. But it's like, that could possibly be the reason why he got more votes. And so just don't give me talking points. Say that. And that way it's like, hey, we can have a discussion. With just saying a blanket talking point, you really can't have a discussion. There's nothing to discuss. So I just say that. Because I love people that have differing opinions than mine.
Yeah.
But, and it's great to have a discussion, but it's like, if you're going to be closed-minded and just continue to write down the same thing, it doesn't get us anywhere but going in circles.
Yeah. I'm going to disagree with you slightly on that, simply because I think that a lot of people, that's all they know are the talking points. And they think those are the facts. They think those are the truths. And so I don't think I want to limit people from doing that, but you'll notice right away when the talking points start getting repeated, when it becomes like a mantra. Our dedicated liberal who used to call the show, who I saw since banned, and I don't think she's tried to, since then, but she would always say the same things. And it just became, I could say whatever logical argument I wanted, and she'd come back with, well, that's just your opinion. Well, no, it's not. It's like backed up by, a ridiculous amount of evidence and research. But people will dismiss you, for that. A lot of people, they're saying Biden won because that's what they're hearing. I think we talked a little bit about this yesterday, how CNN and MSNBC and a lot of the major sources. In fact, if you go search the Arizona audit, the first thing you see is about 15 stories that are pretty much clones of each other of why Biden won the recount. Well, that's great, but the recount was only a part of the audit. They actually did check, the ballots. As far as the count goes, the count was pretty similar because, as we talked about yesterday, they were including the same fraudulent ballots, duplicate ballots, ballots from dead people, ballots from, different counties. I think I said dead people. I'm not sure. But anyway, it was the whole range of things, three and four duplicates, illegal alien votes, and everything else that was going on, signatures missing. You know, the votes that came in after the election was long over that were still counted. I mean, all these things happen. So as far as the count goes, yeah, I mean, the count came out pretty much the same, but you're still counting. You know, that's like, it's like if you go over the same evidence, you know, in a trial and you come to the same conclusion, well, let's, you don't change the evidence or no new evidence appears, that pretty much makes sense, even if that evidence is wrong. And so that's what we're having now, is that people are taking that one story, you know, that gets repeated like a mantra, because there's a terrified fear out there that Donald Trump really did win the election. So my question for you, Gene, as we go into this just a little bit, and I've got a whole different topic to talk about today, but we got plenty of time, so this is good. But what do you think, why are people afraid of Donald Trump? What do you think he represents that so many people in media and government and so many people in this country, rhinos too, I mean, the Republicans, why do they think they have such a vested interest in not only getting rid of Trump, but getting rid of the memory of Trump, erasing anything he did, reversing his policies, anything that has the Trump label on it, all of a sudden becomes, you know, to many people, some horrible thing. It's like half the country loves what he did because we know it works, and the other half of the country hates what he did, even though they know it worked too, but they still hate him for it. I don't understand hating someone who makes things better. Can you begin that discussion?
I was listening to something last night, and then I fell asleep. But basically, uh-huh. I think the biggest part is two things. He's not part of the deep state, and the deep state is so infiltrated with mainstream media, with Hollywood, with what is going on, that I think that's a big thing. And like you said before, people just look at, or they just listen to CNN or ABC, NBC, whatever they listen to, or even Fox, and get a story that they hear every other place of that's involved with the same deep state stuff. So when you hear it enough times, you're going to believe it. But then it's like if you look elsewhere, like One American News or sometimes even Newsmax or some other places, and you can see, you may get a different side of it. Or even like what happened last week in Arizona, if you listen to the ninjas and listen to what they said versus relying on what the mainstream media said. But I think it has, it's based on people's fears. And like we said yesterday, too, people say he's racist. Show us one thing that he did that's racist. But we can tell you a lot of examples where Biden is racist, what he said, what he did. But no, people don't believe that. Even on videotape, you can see Biden doing and saying what he's doing. And they still don't believe that. But right away, Trump, boom. And I think... It is interesting, but yes, I think the deep state is so, I mean, this isn't something that's just started, but this is just something recently that we're constantly being made more and more aware of. And so I think that's the thing. He's not one of them. And I think that drives those, you know, people in Washington nuts, because he's not an insider. But it is so weird, because when he was on The Apprentice, look how many people loved him and would flock to him. And then when he announced he's going to become president, it's totally different. But Greg, I do have a question, and I wasn't able to find this, and I don't know if you know anything about it, but I've read a couple articles about Wendy Rogers in Arizona, and supposedly she made a deal. Made a deal with were they the Republicans out there? So, and it's got people up in arms, but I don't know if that's necessarily true, that she wasn't going to do anything to them because they didn't, you know, basically they didn't do what they were supposed to do. So she, I don't know. There's something about a piece of paper she had them sign, or she signed saying she wasn't going to prosecute.
No, I don't think it's Wendy Rogers. I think you're thinking of Karen Fan, the Senate president, because the rumor was that she was not going to go decertification.
Right.
Okay, so that's the only thing I know. And I heard that before the audit came out, But I haven't heard anything since about that. So that's something we can look into for the great election correction report that I sort of do Wednesdays, depending on what's going on. I was pretty strictly holding for many weeks to the election correction and to vaccine report, the Not Ready for Facebook vaccine report, where I talk about all the things that I can't post on Facebook. And so that's something we can definitely look into for tomorrow. But I haven't, you know, I think the momentum is such that she's going to have to go along with this. If the Senate votes, you know, to decertify, they're going to have to go along with it. I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to definitely do it. You know? Oh, well, they can always, trust me, there's always a rhino or a deep state operative or somebody in there. Because
well,
if you notice the, you know, it's like when the Republicans took the House, they made sure to put Paul Ryan in so that no decent legislation would go through. They appointed Bill Barr. Became attorney general to make sure that no decent operations happened at the Justice Department and all the criminals would stay there. They appointed Durham to make sure that nothing would happen until 2 days before the statute of limitations ran out. And even then, he only indicted one person. You know, so the deep state's everywhere. And so there are operatives on the Maricopa County. They're mostly Republicans, you know, Maricopa County City Council or County Council, and they've been stopping the audit every possible turn. So there's no party, you know, the loyalty is to the deep state, not to the party, and certainly not to Americans. And so
right.
That's a different kind of thing. But I think I think she's going to be forced to. I think there'll be enough people because people are furious. They want
this
to be the first domino. Yeah. So they want Arizona to decertify. If Arizona decertifies, that's going to open the floodgates. So it's critical that Arizona does decertify, and I think the pressure will be unbelievable to do so, despite the fact that the Secretary of State, you know, probably a Soros operative or something. I don't know for sure. I'm just speculating because, you know, most of these Secretaries of State that control the elections all seem to be wacko leftists bent on deep state continuation. So let's see. Be interesting.
Now, is the Durham report done or is he still working on it?
Well, I think what happens is because he actually indicted somebody 2 days before the statute of limitations runs out, that suspends the deadline. So if he had not indicted anybody, then I think it would have run out, and then the statute runs out and this commission's gone. But you don't stop a criminal investigation once it started when the statute of limitation runs out. In fact, you can do it the day before, and we found something. You know, and then you can go ahead. Now, here's a question for you, though. Do you think he's doing this just to extend his mandate and keep the paychecks rolling in? Do you think he's actually going to do anything with this indictment? Or do you think he said, oh, gee, I better get – or do you think he said, wow, I really found something now, you know, finally. Let's get this guy and let's get him to sing like a canary and see who he'll take with him. Which do you think? I'll tell you what I think in a second.
It's what I hope. I hope it's the second. I hope he's
got what you hope.
Paycheck. And the reason I say that, he's got, he's older. Look how much money he's got. Really? The money he's making, is it really going to improve the quality of his life? I don't think so. And if you consider, I think it could almost do the opposite as far as if he says anything, then, you know, he could get blasted, his reputation can get blasted and stuff like that. So I really do hope he's going to eventually let the truth be known and make people pay, but make people pay for what they've done. I think for so long, especially in this country, politicians and the like, they can do whatever they want. They can get by with whatever they want. It's fine. Everybody seems to, in law enforcement, at least in the higher ups, they turn a blind eye. But if it's you or I or someone like that, look at January 6th, those people still in prison. How can they still be in prison? I thought innocent until proven guilty. Are you kidding me? And then I was reading something yesterday that Schmidt Schiff, what a piece of work. He's going to try to prosecute people that, I don't know, if they won't cooperate with him for January 6th. But my thinking is this. If it was investigated, they say Trump did nothing wrong. What are we wasting taxpayers' money for? And I know it's because of Pelosi and him and Schumer and all those can't stand Trump. But it's like, are you kidding me? How many times do we have to go around this just to get to the same conclusion?
Well, as long as they're going to obfuscate and change the narrative and keep control and do what they do. You know, I personally think Durham's in it for the paycheck at this point. I think that really rich people, when they have more money than they can possibly spend, it really becomes an ego trip to accumulate more money. You know, if you're a billionaire, try spending $1 billion. Because, and whatever you don't spend, you're going to make on interest another, you know, $100 million. that's 10%, right? So if you invest your money, you get a 10% return. That's $100 million a year. All right. So I could do everything I want to do in this world with about $10 million. I could buy my jet. I could travel. I could have fun. I get a couple, you know, three or four really nice cars. And that's all, you know, and maybe an old house that I can, you know, live in and fix up and have big property and have a couple of guard dogs. You know, that's all I want. I mean, I'm easy. All right. $10 million, I'm happy. You know, and this show may very well do that. I don't know. I mean, I hope so. But the thing is, you know, for billionaires, once you get the first billion, I mean, how much more does the second billion add to your life? And does it just become about accumulating the money because, you know, Gates has more billions than, you know, billionaire X, and then Gates wants more money so he can stay ahead of billionaire X? I think it really comes down to a childish ego, you know, king of the hill, who's got the most marbles? You know, and they lose sight of the fact that they couldn't possibly spend it anyway. So, what, you know, right. You can't take it with you. You know, so what do you do once, you know, once you got the first billion or two, what does it matter? What, you know, what does it matter? Or in my case, $10 million. I can do everything I want, $10 million. Spend a couple of million, you know, on the jet and keeping it going. And maybe, you know, with interest, you know, have enough fuel and maintenance to keep that run, fly around the world on my own jet and broadcast Action Radio from, you know, every corner. Oh, it's got two seats. If you want to come as well, Gene.
We'll produce a show from all over. It's interesting because why do people, once they start making money, so many times they allow money to take over, greed to take over, status to take over?
That was my question for you. I don't know because I've never had a lot of money. And so if I ever get a lot of money, I'm going to find out, and I'll be asking all my friends, you know, make sure I don't change. I want to stay who I am. I want to keep, you know, true to my roots. But I think I'm old enough now and have been poor enough long enough that whenever money, you know, hopefully it will come. But when it does, you know, it's not going to be, I'm not going to go nuts like lottery winners that suddenly buy houses and cars and take exorbitant trips and, you know, blow it all. Most lottery winners lose their money in about 2 years. And so it's actually an investment, you know, in the economy to have people win the lottery because it's going to go back into the economy anyway, which is kind of interesting. I don't plan to be one of those folks. Oh, speaking of which, I think the lottery is $500 million this week, the Powerball, just in case. Well, you know what? I'd buy a ticket, you know, because your chances of winning are infinitely worse if you don't buy a ticket. But if you spend more than it, but you spend more than a dollar, you know, what's the, you know, you're just kind of wasting your money. Because each ticket has the same chance of winning. People say, "Oh, buy 1,000 tickets, I'll have a greater chance of winning." No, you don't. Because each ticket probability. Well, yeah, you're taking up more number combinations. But do you realize how many number combinations there are? Idiots. You know. So it's kind of funny. All right. Did you have more topic you wanted to present? Because I want to. Because otherwise, I want to get into our Catholic charities and the taxpayer funded illegal alien resettlement topic for today. But it's up to you. Because I know this is Gene's hour.
Well, I just want to bring up one more thing. And that was about COVID. And I've not been able to find this either. But I've had a couple people I know recently diagnosed with brain tumors. And I'm wondering what the vaccine, if anything, plays with that. And it just bothers me. And then I had another friend, she got it, and she had cancer for many years, and she recently died. So did the vaccine kind of make that happen faster? I don't know.
Well, that's what they're saying. If you go back over the Health and Freedom Conference that was just held in Colorado over the weekend, one of the doctors said exactly that basically the spike protein infusion of the virus, it's not a vaccine, it's a virus. It's a virus infusion because the virus has messenger RNA that teaches your cells how to make the spike protein that actually is COVID. Okay, I mean, it's actually spreading the disease. This is the ironic part about it. And so the more people that get the vaccine, the more people that are going to want to get the vaccine because the more people are getting sick. That's why the vaccine are getting so sick. That's why they're coming down with COVID. Okay, because the COVID's coming not from the air, although it probably is in a lot of cases. It's actually coming from what they're shooting into their arms. Messenger RNA is genetic instructions that forever alters your DNA. And a lot of people say to the contrary that's not true, Greg. Yeah, it is true. Why do you think they call it messenger RNA? Look at what messenger RNA does. It's a permanent genetic change to your body and they make the spike proteins. Well, the problem with spike proteins is they break off. The spike proteins are the disease. The spike proteins actually have a way. I was listening to the doctor. I'm going to get a recording of this. But the spike proteins, what the messenger RNA thing does is it actually turns off your immune system to allow you to make spike proteins that would otherwise be attacked by your immune system. It gets into your body, and I'm not sure what it does then. But these are the things that are clotting your blood, that are tearing apart your organs, that are doing all kinds of horrible things. And brain tumors would make sense. So what I want to do is over the course of this week, let's look it up. If you have a chance to do that, if you want to present, some articles, some good information on that, and go back to the Health and Freedom Conference and look up the doctor speeches, not the political ones. I mean, it's the same old thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fight for freedom. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, those are nice speeches. They don't do anything. They don't accomplish anything. These doctors had some amazing information, but that's how it works. The spike proteins are the problem. The spike proteins cause your immune system to go wild too. And it actually ends up killing. What kills you is your own immune system, and what's called a cytokine storm. And I'm not exactly familiar with how that works either, but it creates a super immune response and your body goes nuts. And then the virus, invades. And I'll have to look that up sometime and really describe that. But the problem is the vaccine. And of course, people are shedding spike proteins that are causing spike proteins to form in other people. That's why I now take quercetin, which is almost as good as hydroxychloroquine. Vitamin D3, vitamin C, it's about 500 milligrams quercetin, 1,000 milligrams vitamin C, 2,000 international units of vitamin D. I could always up that if I want, and about 20 milligrams of zinc through, lozenges and pumpkin seeds and everything else. So, and I feel fine. Yeah, and I'm in a high-risk group being over 60, but you don't see me slowing down. And also because I had it. Everybody knows I had it, before anybody knew what it was. January, just go back and listen to my January shows. In the beginning of January, I sounded like hell. That's when I was having guest hosts and everything else. Because, that was COVID. I know it was COVID. I haven't been tested for it. But considering I had all the symptoms, everything I had, looks just like COVID. So that's why I worry about it. But anyway, brain tumors. Yeah. Brain, all these cancers are being enhanced. All these disease, all the problems, all the health problems are made worse by the messenger RNA, spike protein infusions. So maybe next week. Yeah.
All right.
So it'll be something, but it makes sense. And the other thing, like I said, a friend of mine, we talked about this off the air a little bit, but a friend of mine also, who reminded me that Bo Biden, who we all know died of cancer, died of the cancer that one gets from a cell phone and cell phone radiation. And this is being completely obscured by the mainstream media, but this is why you never put a cell phone to your head. Never, 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 never. You never leave it in your pocket next to your body when it's on. I mean, when I have to carry a cell phone on, I put my wallet between it. So it's like an inch of space between the cell phone and me. Now, is that perfect? No, but it's a hell of a lot better than being right next to you. These things emit radiation. They are a transmitter. And so what happens is when they're on, especially when they're on working like a phone call, the radiation that comes out of those things is huge, but it also reduces, diminishes, by a huge amount the further away you get from it. And we're talking like an inch is an amazing reduction in radiation. But right next to you, if you're touching the machine, yeah. So we should look into the brain cancer, something blastoma, whatever. You can look it up, or I'll look it up too, or I'll talk to my friend again. And it's a cancer that comes from cell phones, and it's exploding as a cancer because people are using cell phones. They're actually putting it up to their faces. Don't do that. Headsets, speakerphone. You'll notice if you ever talk to me, I never put it to my head. I'm always on the speakerphone because I want it away from me. But a couple of feet, makes all the difference in the world. So anyway, that's a great topic for us. All right, we're going to cover this in the first hour and the second hour. In fact, let me just I'm going to do a quick little intro of why we do the Santa Rosa Volunteers founding pieces. I'll play the other one probably at the top of the hour because we're going to have Shelby join us about 10 minutes past the hour. Let me play this for you now. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com. srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. This is also a good time to remind you we have a new webmaster who is doing fabulous work with our website, writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS. That's the heart of Action Radio, the legislation. And we have many in the works. In fact, we have a bill going before the Santa Rosa County Commission on Thursday. We're going to talk about that tomorrow with David Jones, who's working with me on that. He's doing the real work right now, the lobbying, the activism, the getting people together, going to the meeting. We worked on actually writing the bill, which is more my specialty. Anyway, so to get back to our new webmaster, Eric Cawley, that's E-R-I-C-C-A-W-L-E-Y, to help you with your small business marketing. Eric Cawley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google page one. Also to gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. His phone number is 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. And you can get him at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And, of course, that's his website, besmallbusiness.com, besmallbusiness.com. And if you miss any part of that, that's why we podcast. That's the beauty of it. So, that should get you going there. All right. Gene, any comments before I launch into another completely different topic, the main topic of the show today?
No, you go into the other topic.
Well, thank you. It's so much fun. We're a cooperative effort here. All right. Let me just organize here. Okay. So Center for Immigration Studies. This is an article that's older, but the problems are every bit as bad. Actually, they're far worse now, and they're far more costly. One of the things I was wondering about, and I've asked some folks to investigate some of these different charities that are helping illegal aliens, is what we see in the media is that we see them crossing the border. We see them breaking through the border, going around the border, doing all these different things. We see all of this happening. And what we don't see is where they go. I mean, occasionally you'll see like a bus or something like that transporting people around. But what really happens? You know, how are these folks able to do that? There was a report in Milton about a bus that showed up from the government with a bunch of illegals, and then a whole bunch of cars showed up to take them away, God knows where. So one of the things I want to do is find out where and who, and who's doing that. And one of the where it seems to be pointing a lot of this is Catholic Charities. And so I found an article by James R. Edwards, and this is March 16th of 12th, so Obama administration. And the title from the website Center for Immigration Studies, Religious Agencies and Refugee Resettlement. He says, while illegal immigration usually raises the ire of the public and politicians, few look closely at refugee programs. Most Americans, including Christians, reject the pro-amnesty stance fashionable among religious elites, from the U.S. Catholic Conference to the Southern Baptist Convention to the National Association of Evangelicals. Yet many faith-based organizations, including arms of major religious entities, engage in resettling refugees. Well, I wouldn't call it resettling. I call it more like dumping and burdening us with them for whatever reason. I'm going to find out what those reasons are, but let me continue with the article. And Gene, if you have a question or a comment, you know, feel free to stop me anytime. You can do the hotel bell. In fact, you should do that every once in a while just so people know what it sounds like. But just imagine, you know, room service. Okay. So just arbitrarily, just do it for the hell of it sometime. You don't even have to have a comment. Just ping it just because it's fun. We have fun here. We have even these deadly serious topics. But all right, so the article says the memorandum briefly reports on the financial stake certain religious agencies have in U.S. refugee resettlement. It shows that refugee resettlement has become dependent, or here you go, listen to this, has become dependent on U.S. taxpayers and is a disruption to American communities with non-governmental agencies profiting from it. So let me put that in English for you, okay? Illegal aliens cross the border. The government contracts with these agencies through public funding. These non-government organizations, Catholic Charities, the Baptists, the Lutherans, the Evangelicals, there's a bunch of different organizations that are being paid by our government with our tax money to resettle illegal aliens here to screw up our lives. Okay, that's what it is. And if it, you know, people, there's a budget crisis, right? So Congress is looking, oh, what are we going to do? We have to raise the debt ceiling to pay our obligations. Well, if they wouldn't make the obligations in the first place, they wouldn't have to raise the debt ceiling. So they've got it ass backwards. But here's the thing too: you want to cut the budget? Stop funding illegal aliens. Stop funding these organizations. Stop funding Catholic Charities and Lutheran Conference and Evangelicals and Baptist ministries and all that stuff that are basically, you know, taking our money to resettle people here that have no right to be here. Got a comment? I mean, it's probably a good place to take a breath, I think.
It's interesting. You just have to kind of follow the money because mm-hmm. they wouldn't be doing it if they wouldn't be getting money out of it.
So what I'm thinking is if we can find a way to defund them, and of course I already have a bill on my list. I don't know if I tell you this, Gene. I have 158 now bill
wow.
ideas beyond the bills we already have on writeyourlaws.com. That's how much work I have to do, you know, and then hopefully I'll be able to get other folks to contribute and write these bills. But that's you wonder what Action Radio is up to? That's what we're up to, 158 bill ideas, just like this one, to defund church organizations, you know, and stop them from making a profit and dumping illegal aliens in our neighborhoods. All right, so that's one of many. So yeah, one day I might just read them all. probably take the whole 2 hours. All right, so the United States admitted, and this is in fiscal year 2011. So this is way down. We're looking at 2 million this year, just to put that in perspective. So they were complaining about 56,424 refugees in fiscal year 2011, down from the prior year's 73,311 admissions, but still far higher than the rest of the world's developed nations combined. So in other words, we take more, quote, refugees than all the rest of the wonderful industrialized world combined. That is insanity. That is stupid. We refuse to act in our own interests. And it says, and the main reason for last year's drop was the steep decline in admissions of Iraqi refugees after two such refugees were arrested for plotting to send weapons and money to Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Gee, you mean they're not all wonderful people, all virtuous? No, they're not. That total does not include, back to the article, other categories of humanitarian admissions that offer the same financial benefits to the religious agencies as refugees, such as asylees, that would be asylum seekers, okay? I guess they don't say asylees anymore because the American education system has reduced the capacity of kids to learn new words. My comment, back to the article, and Cuban Haitian entrants, each with more than 20,000 admissions. It is to the United States' credit that our nation has, from her founding, provided a safe haven for the unjustly persecuted. However, even well-meaning efforts require accountability and should be balanced against other important competing priorities. Without appropriate balance and oversight, helping refugees shifts from being a worthy humanitarian gesture in truly exceptional cases, and I do mean exceptional, which is, you know, rare, extremely rare, okay, to an avenue for government largesse, enriching private bureaucracies while feeding public cynicism. Let's get to Pianki. He's on the line now, too, and we shall continue our chat. Sir, welcome to the show, Reverend Pianki.
Well, you did on it today.
Oh, yeah.
About these religious organizations where mm-hmm. government is not supposed to respect any. But they are.
Yeah.
That's one reason why some they are allowed to have tax-exempt status so that they can collect money on their own rather than going to the government for things.
You know, I'm going to have to add that to Bill. That's a good thing. I didn't think of that. Tax-exempt status. So all these, like, Catholic Charities and Lutheran Conference and Baptist and Evangelical Conference, they're all, you know, they're tax-exempt because they're churches, allegedly, right?
Well, they tax-exempt because they're supposed to provide to the people what people
right.
would otherwise, get this, look for at the federal government. And now, and see, the thing is, their membership is dropping. They are based on prayer and hope rather than work and substance. And their membership is dropping tremendously. If that happens, well, then the foul of the money, all of a sudden it stops.
No more collection plates, huh? So how can they get taxpayer funding and still be tax exempt? There's something wrong here. Well, I want churches to be tax exempt. I want churches to be, classified as nonprofit, not taxed, because if you start taxing religion, you can control religion by government. And so that's the reason churches aren't taxed is First Amendment, free expression of religion. That would completely restrict their operation, although they have done that themselves during the COVID, farce. Interesting. Jean, do you have a comment? Otherwise, I want to
No, you can go on.
Get a little further in this. Okay. So the background of this, and this is from the article here. Let me just restate it again for those just joining us. Religious agencies and refugee resettlement is for the Center for Immigration Studies. That's Mark Krikorian. I want to get him on the show. It's, he's on my voluminous guest list. There's probably a couple hundred by now people I want to talk to. Anyway, March 16th, 2012. Background. Colloquially speaking, refugees are persons displaced by natural disasters, war, civil unrest, and similar causes of danger and persecution. Ideally, they can return to their homeland once conditions are restored. Traditionally, refugees being brought to America received ad hoc assistance from the State Department and from private charities spending their own money. Refugee Decisions tracks U.S. foreign policy interests with refugees being admitted mainly from Middle East and communist countries. Yeah, it was in our interest. I mean, we always take Cubans, because A, they deserve the freedom, because they're in a dictatorship, and B, because we want to rub the nose of Cuban, the fact that we're taking their people, so they're interested in this. Iran, especially when they stole our hostages. Yeah, we're going to take your people. We're going to take your best and brightest, your engineers, your industrialists, your doctors, your lawyers, screw you. We'll steal your people. But now they're taking Afghani goat herders happen to be 100,000 just waiting there at Karzai Airport to leap on airplanes while Americans were left behind. I don't know about you folks, but that to me is not a coincidence. That's why they closed Bagram, so that they could put 100,000, Afghan refugees there, because there's no security. The Taliban, had the perimeter of Karzai Airport. Our military had the perimeter of Bagram. They'd never gotten through if the evacuations were from Bagram. And that's why they had to let it go. Just my theory. Okay, 1968, the United States effectively became party to the 1951 United Nations Refugee Convention. This adopted the broad UN definition of, quote, refugee, expanded the rights afforded refugees, and prohibited refugees, quote, return to their home country if they claimed fear of persecution. So all those Hondurans here from the earthquake, 20 years ago, the Haitians that are here, well, I might get persecuted in my own country. Maybe Baby Duck 2 is going to rise to power in Haiti. All they have to do is say, I got a fear of persecution. Okay. They get to stay. That's insane. And why are we taking laws from the UN anyway? So back to the article. The 1980 Refugee Act further aligned U.S. refugee policy with UN policy. Oh, what a surprise. 1980. I'm surprised Ronald Reagan. Oh, maybe not. Maybe Ronald Reagan was more of a globalist than we thought. Anyway, certainly the Congress was. Reagan should have vetoed this. 1980 Refugee Act further aligned U.S. refugee policy. Maybe Carter did it. Maybe it was before the election. Anyway, I'm rambling. UN High Commission. I'm going to start again. The 1980 Refugee Act further aligned U.S. refugee policy with UN policy and established a federal refugee resettlement program. There we go. The president now sets an annual refugee cap. It's probably like the debt ceiling. It probably gets raised every year. However, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, whose office processes displaced persons and determines whether one meets the definition of refugees, drives the process. So here's the problem. The problem is we have church charities making money resettling people that have no right to be here. You've got the United Nations, which hates this country, which is dedicated to world socialism and sort of reducing the United States to a third world country as rapidly as possible, defining what refugees are. It's like when the WHO, the World Health Organization, the WHO, redefined what herd immunity is to include a definition that only includes vaccinated people. Okay. And they changed it. So there's no way to achieve herd immunity under the new definition unless you're vaccinated, which of course is insane because the vaccines are spreading the disease. So it's an irrational concept, but it's a way to bring everybody under their umbrella. So why do we let the United Nations define refugee when we are perfectly capable of doing that ourselves? Comments?
No, I don't have a comment.
Oh, okay. Then I'll continue. Pianki?
You owe
it to
something. Keep going.
Yeah, and you guys don't have
to.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, no, I was maybe telling Gina, hang on. This is going to be a good ride.
Oh, yeah, I'm just getting started. I've got three more articles. This is going to be a long day. We're going to do this up until 7, and then at 8 o'clock I'll pick up whatever I don't get through this time. Private entities such as Church World Service, an agency started by 30 Protestant denominations in 1946. That's right after World War II, if you're keeping count. All right. Formally bore the full cost of resettling refugees. See, that was private. Wasn't that nice? That's when things were good. Such agencies helped refugees secure sponsors, such as a local church. The sponsors assumed responsibility for providing a refugee's housing and other needs, finding him or her a job, and seeing that he or she became, here's the big word, self-sufficient in the community. So they were not a burden to the community. They were contributing to the community. And if you can probably guess how many refugees there were after World War II, after the Russians plowed through Eastern Europe, after Nazi Germany, you know, went across Eastern and Western Europe, you know, in Russia, and of course the whole the Asia with the Empire of Japan destroying, you know, a good chunk of China and Burma and Thailand and, you know, any other country along the way. You can see there was a ton of refugees. I don't know how many we took after World War II, but I bet you we took more from Afghanistan than we took after World War II. All right, they got a table here. Major refugee resettlement voluntary agencies. If they're being paid, they're not volunteers, okay? So I'm not going to call them volunteers anymore. These are paid agents of the State Department, you know, in their quest to destroy our country. All right, Church World Service Immigration and Refugee Program. There's one. That's religious. Episcopal Migration Ministries. What do you mean migration ministries? These aren't migrants. They're certainly not refugees either. These are aliens. We call it Episcopal Alien Ministries, EAM. All right. Here's another one. Ethiopian Community Development Council. Gina, I wonder if that brought in all the Somalis. What do you think?
Could be, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Somali is different, but they're close enough. I mean, we have an Ethiopian community here, too, which is great. I love Ethiopia. I like the restaurants, but that's not the point. They shouldn't be a development council. You know, so in other words, we're bringing in particular ethnic or national groups, you know, and they have a paid organization to do that. Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. Well, I thought we had a pretty substantial Jewish community in this country already. So what are the Jewish organizations doing? I want to find that out too. International Rescue Committee. Well, it could be anything. Kurdish Human Rights Watch. Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants, U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Migration and Relief Services, and last organization, World Relief. I shall go on. Since 1980, the new Bureau of Population, Refugees and Migration, I didn't know we had a Bureau of Population, Refugees and Migration, in the State Department, well, there you go, there's the State Department again, has referred individuals' files to one of 10, quote, voluntary agencies or VOLAGs. That's what they call them, VOLAGs, okay? So there's a new term for you all. What I would call them is basically traitorous, infiltrators of other nations, it's not refugee, it's more like refuse. Anyway, oh, I get in trouble for that term. Sorry, folks. Hey, listen, if you're not going to help the country, you don't have a reason to be here. All right. VOLAGs, here we go. The majority of VOLAGs are religiously affiliated. Let me get that table I just read. VOLAGs receive a reception and placement grant from the PRM, that's the Population, Refugees, and Migration Department, for each refugee they are assigned. Assigned? VOLAGs also collaborate with, quote, mutual assistance associations, which focus mainly on ensuring that their charges retain strong ethnic and homeland ties. Did you guys miss the word assimilation in that discussion? Did I miss that somewhere? You know, that's what we do with immigrants. They assimilate, they become, you know, American culture. I mean, keep your own culture as much as you want. But do you see the lack of the word assimilation in there? I do. So in other words, why would you promote people to retain everything that they brought from their home country here when they're here? I mean, I don't go to France and try and turn it into little America. Well, that'd be an interesting idea. Hey, do we have a little America anywhere in the world? Anybody
know? You know, you should play that one speech that Congresswoman Barbara Jordan made about immigration. It is dead on time. She made it when she was living. You can get it on YouTube.
I can get it on YouTube.
It's
I have
not
to
too
upload
long.
It. I'm not sure if I can upload it, though. But what you can do is post it to the Action Radio group, because I know I've seen it before. But Barbara Jordan was fabulous. She was amazing. Did she run for president?
Hey, you know another thing?
What's that?
You know, another thing, too, the Bible talks about building walls around your society.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, this is definitely, what's that? Oh, Gene's playing something.
No.
Gene, hit a button. Oh, no, that was pretty good. I mean, I can talk over it. Gene, hit a button.
I like that. My feet started moving on their own.
No, don't be sorry. That was actually kind of funny. So that's the so Gene, you know, remember you've got the buttons too. So when you hit things, they go on. That was pretty innocuous.
I didn't do anything. I don't know what I did, but
yes, you did. Well, I didn't. I've got all the buttons covered up with this article right now. That's funny. Yeah, no, actually, and if you want to spontaneously play something like that, you know, I'll just see if I can talk over it. That particular one is very good. I use that as a background for our founding moments pieces. That is the drums and fifes. So if you want to talk, if we're ever doing a patriotic thing, we can play that. And I found out too, we can also cut them off partway through. I just can't fade them out. All right, back to our article here. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of Refugee Resettlement. Why do we have Office of Refugee Resettlement? Anyway, works further with VOLAG and local affiliates, enrolling refugees in a broad range of welfare programs. Let me say that again. Enrolling refugees in a broad range of welfare programs for which refugees automatically qualify after 30 days. They are not subject to the 7-year federal bar on welfare participation for immigrants. See, they're not immigrants, okay? They're refugees. You know, and those who naturalize remain eligible for welfare dependency beyond their first 7 years here. So in other words, just like everything else, there are two standards. There's a standard for those that the government wants to bring in to destroy our country, and there's a standard for those that actually get lucky enough to come here who are actually qualified to be immigrants. Okay, and so if you're an immigrant, come here, you can't get welfare in the first 7 years because the whole idea is you're not a public charge. And it used to be, I don't know if it still exists, but it used to have a sponsor. In other words, someone would sign for you to come to the country who would say, I'll be responsible if they go on welfare. I will take care of them so they don't become a public charge. So you never want to bring in an immigrant that's going to cause you any welfare. That's actually in the law. Okay, so the fact that all these folks are coming in and we're paying for them taxes and having them immediately go on welfare is actually against U.S. law. In fact, I posted a law yesterday, which makes it illegal for aliens to be here. You know, that's that little section of the, you know, go back on my Facebook page in the Action Radio group. Okay, in addition to federal assistance, a number of state and local welfare programs also underwrite refugee resettlement in their locales. So that means we have to check Florida law, you should probably check Missouri law, Pianchi, and Jane, check your state too, where you are. Well, and if you're not a resident for very long, it depends how long you're going to be there. But the thing is, people should check their own states. See if your states have welfare programs for refugees. All right. In fact, and look up the definition of refugees, see if they actually are refugees or they're just, you know, illegal aliens that are being brought in here under the refugee banner or the migrant banner. Because these people aren't migrants. Okay. Migrants are invited in. Migrants have gone to the consulate, filled out the paperwork, have been accepted as immigrants to this country. That's what a migrant is. Okay. These people are not migrants. Anyway, the system is structured so that it is in refugee assistance organizations' self-interest to get a refugee to a receiving locality, enrolled in public welfare programs, and move along to the next refugee. Let me say that again. The system is structured so that it is in refugee assistance organizations' self-interest to get a refugee to a receiving locality, I'm not sure how they do that, enrolled in public welfare programs and move along to the next refugee. So in other words, the people that are making money from our tax dollars actually make more money from our tax dollars for getting people enrolled in welfare programs from our tax dollars. You know, who was that congressman used to say, beam me up, Scotty? What world are we living in? And why isn't this common knowledge? Why isn't this being reported every day? Well, it's not, so that's why I'm doing it. Moving on, for the love of money, similar to what happened to private charity when government took over many of its functions and became less effective and efficient as a result, a refugee assistance industry has built up around government-run refugee bureaucracies and funding streams. It resembles other conglomerations of associations, agencies, and professional pleaders focused full-time on protecting and expanding their share of the public till, from public housing advocates to lobbies surrounding each, quote, human services program. Program stakeholders that receive millions of taxpayer dollars usually continue to receive funding year after year with little accountability. That means Congress isn't doing any oversight, folks. This doesn't appear in a budget hearing. It's just an automatic transfer. Back to the article. These groups' mission becomes guarding the government golden goose rather than helping people achieve self self-sufficiency or maximizing efficiency and usage of public money. Well, I would go for self-sufficiency. See, charities used to actually help people, and they're private charities, Salvation Army, you know, some of these folks. That's the best example I can think of. But they actually do. They help people. They're completely privately funded. They're a Christian organization, and their goal is self-sufficiency. You know, God bless the Salvation Army. As for these other leeches off our public tax dollars, screw you. I'm gonna find a way to defund you. So share the show, folks. Help make us powerful. The more people share the show, the more powerful we'll be able to do things like that. Yeah, go ahead.
You have agencies like USAID.
Uh-huh.
And you go to their website and look at the money that is given to these countries like El Salvador, Honduras,
mm-hmm.
and Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got people saying that they're leaving because they're being persecuted, then why are you continue to give the government money to persecute their people to make them leave and come to the U.S. and be further a burden that's going to cost taxpayers more money?
So we're paying money to help the country. We're also paying money to take their citizens away and have them here, and then we're paying them to stay here on welfare. That's insane.
Yes.
Yeah, that's insane. Yep. Back to the article. The amount of funding up for grabs for refugee resettlement is significant. The reception and placement grant was $900 per refugee assigned to a VOLAG from 1980 until 2010. In 2010, the RPG, it's not rocket propelled grenade, folks, the RPG level doubled to $1,800 per assigned refugee. 2010. Gee, whose administration was that? Let me think. Oh, I don't know. Obama? All right. A resettlement agency pockets $700 of each per refugee grant. $700 per person pocketed. And that doesn't count the tax money they get, too, I'm sure, on top of that. ORR Further, that's the Office of Refugee Resettlement, ORR Further funds VOLAGs and affiliates through separate grant programs. Table 2 shows the amount of federal funding allotted to several of the private refugee resettlement organizations. Okay, I'm not going to say, I can't describe Table 2. The numbers are too small. But just go, you know, I post this article enough times. I think it's in the Action Radio group, which is public. But anyway, just go to Center for Immigration Studies, Religious Agencies and Refugee Resettlement by James R. Edwards, Jr., March 16th, 2012. Okay, and that all information is podcast, so I don't have to repeat it. All right. The VOLAGs that resettle refugees also maintain significant lobbying offices and advocacy programs where public policy and politics are the coins of the realm. Think about that. They're taking our tax money. They're taking our tax money to fund illegal aliens. They're taking our tax money, you know, per illegal alien that they settle here. They're taking tax money to lobby to get more tax money to bring in more illegal aliens to get more grants for resettling them. This is follow the multiple money train. I mean, this is just getting worse, all right? It says where it's – okay, so anyway, because the money is fungible, you know, in other words, you can't trace it, the more dollars these groups collect from the government, the more private monies can go toward other purposes like political advocacy and lobbying. So if their expenses are paid for by you, they can lobby for more money to be paid for by you. Right? These groups certainly have a First Amendment right to petition the government, but they have no right to force taxpayers who may disagree with those agencies' agenda to pay for their advocacy. I think that's all I want to do in this article.
That's what Omar is doing.
Yeah.
Omar is lobbying for more money for Somali.
Yep.
The lead in Detroit, Michigan, is lobbying for more money for Palestine. I mean, that's a big racket that's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I was getting Ethiopia and Somalia confused. I don't think – I think those are two completely separate countries. But – the point is, you know, you have an Ethiopian bureau bringing in Ethiopians. I'm sure there's a Somali bureau now bringing in Somalis, and there's going to be an Afghan, you know, Muslim church bringing, you know, mosque bringing in Afghanis. This is crazy. All right. Anyway, so well, let me continue. We're almost done with this, and I think I should be able to finish this before 7 o'clock. One of the evils stemming from the apparent love of taxpayer money relates to the adverse effects resettlement agencies cause for the American cities where refugees are settled, which is exactly what we're talking about. Little Mogadishu, little Somalia, you know, all these different places. Now, little Havana is different because those are Cubans who are here for freedom. They're here to work and build and contribute to the economy. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the parasites. I'm talking about the folks that are here to take from this country. That's the problem. A 2010 report, back to the article from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, concluded that resettlement organizations essentially force refugees on U.S. town cities without consent or even notice. Table 3 shows the U.S. metropolitan areas receiving the largest number of refugees, and Table 4 ranks metro areas by the share of new immigration that is the result of refugee resettlement. In other words, those cities most affected by federal refugee policies. Okay, let me stop for a second here because we have a bill. We have a bill that's before the Santa Rosa County Board of County Commissioners. It is a bill to create an illegal alien-free zone here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. It is a model for the nation because it uses a local law enforcement procedure, asset forfeiture, to basically seize any property owned by an illegal alien, because any property owned by an illegal alien was illegally gotten because they can't be here. It is illegal for them to be here. So they are basically engaging in a criminal operation, which they decide to do every single day they wake up here, okay? This is a serial crime. This is a serial felony. This felony is committed daily over the course of decades, okay? And every day they wake up and say, I'm not going back home. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to profit off Americans. I'm going to take tax dollars, okay? So all these illegal aliens, millions upon millions of them, there's going to be about 2 million more this year. If you want to combat that, take a look at this bill. It's at writeyourlaws.com. It's the top bill. You know, creating an illegal alien free zone in Santa Rosa County. It's the opposite of your sanctuary city, right? Whereas illegal aliens can run to sanctuary cities and not be prosecuted because they obviously don't follow the law. If you come here to Santa Rosa County and we get this passed, and it's up for a meeting Thursday. So Thursday night at 6:30, and I'm going to get the address from David Jones. We're going to talk about this tomorrow. But if this bill passes, we'll be the first in the nation, as far as I can tell, to pass an illegal alien free zone bill and have the ability to seize houses, cars, businesses, you know, anything owned by an illegal alien. Okay. Now, if we take their house, do you think the bank's going to be interested in checking citizenship before they make mortgages? Yeah, you bet they are. Schools, same thing. Schools are going to have to ask. You know, or we're going to make them ask, you know, somehow that's going to be a fight. That's going to be the big fight, is to get schools to find out if the parents are legally in the country, because we're not going after the kids. Kids are at fault here. Kids are minors. They don't, you know, we don't persecute the kids, but we make parents to take their kids to another school system out of this county. Okay. It's not our problem if they leave. Some other county has to deal with them. That's their problem. Okay. And the more counties that adopt this bill, the fewer places illegal aliens will be. They will be forced, they'll be funneled into the socialist Marxist states and counties. And then it's their problem. If they want to do something about it, don't try and burden us with your expenses. You know, it's going to be an interesting fight, but at least we can get them out of here, and this is a start. Okay, Table 3, top 20 refugee-receiving areas, metropolitan areas. 1, New York City. 2, Los Angeles. 3, Chicago. 4, Orange County. 5, Seattle. 6, San Jose. Has anybody noticed a trend here? These, except for Orange County, these are all Democrat cities, okay? Washington, D.C., number 7. Minneapolis, St. Paul. Gee, I have communities there. Number 8. Atlanta, Georgia, number 9. Sacramento, California, number 10. Boston, Massachusetts. I think we've only got one conservative place so far, Orange County, and even that's being Democrat partyized. There's a word for that. We'll think of it. Anyway, Portland, Oregon, number 12. San Diego, number 13. Philadelphia, number 14. Houston, number 15. Miami, number 16. San Francisco, number 17. Dallas, number 18. Oakland, number 19. And Phoenix, number 20, where it says Maricopa County, which recently had an audit thrown against them for election corruption. Number 20, largest receiving of U.S. Grants. There we go. Again, if you folks want to leap in, I got about 2 more minutes before the top of the hour. Well, it's not an exact thing here. I'm going to play our Santa Rosa volunteer, Andy Federalist, number 5 here, before Shelby joins us about 10 minutes past the hour. Top 20 cities in refugees as share of new immigrants. Are you ready? Utica, New York. Fargo, North Dakota. Erie, Pennsylvania. Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Binghamton, New York. Spokane, Washington. Portland, Maine. Lincoln, Nebraska. Do you see a pattern here? These are Republican districts. Okay, Portland, Maine, Lincoln, Nebraska, Waterloo, Cedar Falls, Iowa, Burlington, Vermont. Well, I don't know about Burlington. Same thing with Manchester. Des Moines, Iowa, Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, that's St. Louis, Missouri. Uh-oh, Pianki. Did you know? St. Louis, one of the top 20 cities in refugees.
They put 80,000 Bosnians were brought into St. Louis. 30,000, then they brought in another 50,000. In South St. Louis.
That was the Clinton administration?
Where the white population moved away from.
So they replaced white Americans with white Bosnians?
Well, yeah. There's another community.
You think nobody would notice?
Do
you think nobody notices? People come in all of a sudden speaking in strange accent in Louisville, you know, in St. Louis, Missouri. I am American, just like you, American. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Years ago, they formed a Russian community right there off of Delmar and DeVolver. And then, of course, you had Somalis coming in, too.
Yep. Hey, the Russians is good folks, comrade. We put borscht on your pizza. We have good time. Anyway, now what's interesting is there's a large Russian community in the San Francisco Bay Area. You can walk down the street and still hear Russian spoken, especially in the Richmond District, which is the northwest part of the city. But those folks came from Russian traders, they're descendants of Russian whalers, they're descendants of Russian gold miners. I mean, these are folks that came here, you know, as real Americans. You know, they came here from Russia, you know, as immigrants, as legal immigrants. So that's a whole different thing than creating a community. Okay, an artificial community to maintain. Now, your Russian community, are they here to assimilate and be Americans with, you know, nice Russian bakeries and tea rooms, or are they actually maintaining, you know, Russia's a better place, you know, Putin's a great guy, and you know, when America goes communist, we'll all be in better shape. Which is it?
Well, they don't assimilate.
Okay, that's the problem.
They don't assimilate. They have their own little enclave. And blacks, you got black voices say the reason why come they don't. Now, this is what I don't understand. Like, people complaining about Haitians not being able to come in, all right? Then they say the reason why come whites don't let the Africans in is because whites' population is becoming a minority. And then on the same time, they telling blacks that they need to go to Africa for whatever reason. Well, why would you take the people from those countries and then at some point in time you complain about brain drain? It's just a big ball of confusion.
Well, it's interesting, too, that a lot of this is skin color based, which always amuses me. I mean, why can't we resettle the Irish who have, you know, a bad potato crop one year? You know, or I mean, Ireland's doing really well. That's a bad example. But the thing is, there are white Bosnians, there are white Ukrainians, there are white, you know, Herzegovina Muslims. You know, the Boston terrorists were, you know, a couple of white guys. You know, but it all seems to be. I think the Democrats either have a fear of their own whiteness, or the fact that they're so racially oriented in their ideology that they can't see anything else but skin color. But you never see them trying to bring in, you know, a community of white people that may be disadvantaged, like our own, you know, folks up in Appalachia. You know, we've got a white population in this country that is incredibly poor and has been for, I don't know, 150 years or whatever these folks are, you know, living up there in the backwoods, you know, in the middle of the South. And you want to improve a population? Help those folks out. Why are we bringing Afghanis when we have, you know, Appalachia in desperate need of some decent economic help? That never made sense to me. And these are Americans, you know, so.
Well, you know what really don't make sense?
What's that?
United States, and I'm just talking about one specific group. United States, there are over 800,000 blacks in prisons. Not including everybody else. I'm just talking about them. Well, wouldn't it be ideal to try to rehab those Americans? I hear talk about this, people in prison for things that they didn't do. Well, then why don't we attend to that and lower that population that's in prison?
Yeah, there's a couple of groups doing that. In fact, it's probably time I had him back on. Jeffrey Deskovic has his own Innocence Project because he was wrongfully accused and convicted wrongly of rape and murder when he was 16 years old, and he spent the next 17 years in jail. And so he has an Innocence Project, or his own Innocence Project. And of course there is the Innocence Project, which is doing amazing work with DNA, especially, to get people out that shouldn't be there. But this is why I've always been against the death penalty. You know, I mean, conservatives will yell at me and say, wait a minute, you got to kill those murderers. Well, how do you know those are the murderers? Well, you're just some soft liberal. No, I'm not. I believe in the Constitution. Do you? You know, I mean, if you look at the Bill of Rights, it's like about a third of the amendments to the Bill of Rights are on the rights of the accused, because governments are notorious for judging people guilty and not even worrying about proving them innocent. You know, of course, after the execution, it's a bit late, and who cares? Well, because you can't recover from an execution. Okay, you can't give somebody the rest of their life back after an execution, and so the most horrendous people in the world You know, still, let's punish them, make the rest of their life miserable. But the problem is some of those folks are going to be innocent, and they shouldn't be there. And that's why we have these protections, and they're not being followed. They're not followed in a lot of cases. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. But here's the thing. Why would you house and maintain 800,000 Americans in prison, and at the same time you bring in hundreds of thousands of foreign refugees? Well, should you not use that money to not only prevent further population of those prisons, but also to try to rehab those prisoners so that they can become productive American citizens?
Yeah.
Haitians is not going to come into the country and become in the next week be brain surgeons or engineers. So they're going to go through that same process that the prisoners should be going through who are American. It just does not make any sense.
Well, of course not. But if they were proper merit-based immigrants, then they would come here and be contributing. They would be Haitian doctors and Haitian lawyers and Haitian engineers and Haitian scientists and entrepreneurs and things like that. I mean, every country has, you know, decent people who we'd love to have here in this country. Yeah, it's a brain drain, but those countries are free to become free. You know, nobody stops the country from becoming free. All right, that's something you know, think of, except their own government. You know, and the people, the elites in power, because they don't want freedom. They want control. And the love of control is probably the greatest evil on the planet. They say love of money is, but no, it's really the love of control. Money is just a tool. And so all these countries could help their own countries, you know, by simply becoming free. I mean, there's nothing magical about freedom that it only applies in the United States. I mean, we happen to have a certain amount of it, you know, where, you know, everybody says, you know, we're the freest country in the world. Well, no, you're not. And B, we're nowhere near as free as we could be. And so that's an entirely different argument. But, yeah, it makes no sense. Now, here's the problem, though. Some people in prison are really bad. They should be there, okay? There are people that you do not want walking on the street. I've talked to a corrections officer. In fact, one of my guests at WBY was a chaplain, a prison chaplain. And he told me, he said, yeah, there's a bad dudes there. On the other hand, there's a lot of people that are fatherless, that had a terrible Democrat-run education system, that have, you know, just a horrible family situation that turned to crime as you know, probably the only viable option because nobody was going to give them a job, you know, without some decent training, which they weren't going to get in a Democrat education system. So you got all this stuff going on, all right? You've got all these things happening. Those are the people we need to reach, okay? The people that are there because they couldn't see another option. We need to give them that other option. And the other thing we need to do is to tell employers to stop discriminating against felons. You got to take that off the employment form. You know, were you ever convicted of a crime or things like that? Because those people are cast aside. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, Greg, let me tell you something. Donald Trump was ridiculed for calling Southern country S-hole countries. You know that many places, they don't have sewage.
Yep.
They don't have indoor bathrooms. So what do they do? They dig a hole, you put a box around it, and a cloud on top so you can sit on it, and you put four walls around it and a door. Now, what is that?
No, that's an outhouse. That's a latrine.
Look, in some places, there's fancy words for it. In some places in St. Louis, there on Cass Avenue or Grand, you had the same thing, outdoor toilets. Was that not the same thing that the words he described? So if you don't have those things in a country, well, should not the people be working to develop that country to alleviate those basic things, running water, sewage, electricity?
Well,
if you take the smart people away from them and they're coming to the United States where Americans have, at one point America was that same way, but Americans worked hard to develop out of that.
Yep.
Well, you bring in people who personally in their country is at the same situation. You bringing them out rather than encouraging them to develop out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
No, that's part of the plan, though. The plan is to make us like the rest of the world. The plan is to take away what makes the United States special. The plan is to deindustrialize and have us be the cog. You're just another cog in the wheel. And then you have to get rid of the freedom. You have to get rid of patriotism. You have to get rid of independent education. You have to get rid of public schools. You have to get rid of all the things that make us special as individuals. And you have to get rid of individuality. Okay, groupthink is dedicated to getting rid of individuality. And one of the ways you do that is you bring in people from all over the world who have no concept of freedom. They didn't grow up with the Constitution, like most of our kids now. We have to change that. But you've got people that are basically, as I call it, a compliant peasant class. And the more compliant peasants you have, the more they're going to be willing to accept welfare, and the less they're going to be willing to work and create and be entrepreneurs and take chances and take risks. And that's what a free market society is dependent on, are the risk takers. And if you got people that are dependent, they're the opposite of risk takers. You know, they're actually taking from the system rather than creating to it. You know, you look at Action Radio. Look how many people are involved in Action Radio now. This is going to be a huge enterprise, I believe. And we've created something here, and we are creating something here every day that is going to make a massive contribution to the freedom of this country. You know, I absolutely believe that. That's why I'm doing it. You know, so you think of that, and I'm just one person that started this. Okay, so how much can individuals do? You know, with the same level of I can make this work, you know, in all kinds of other areas of doctors, lawyers, you know, industrialists, you know, business people, inventors, creators, writers, philosophers, you know, musicians. How many things can they create, you know, and stop bringing in these dependent people? Let's bring in the creative people. That's the difference. If you want the society and the country to advance, you have to stop bringing in the parasites and start emphasizing the creative people. I got a little bit more to read on this article. Then I want to get to Shelby. I'll play her there. She's listening in right now. Pianki, do you have another comment? And then I just want to finish this up. There's only a little bit left.
Well, if you keep reading, I can guarantee you I will have another comment.
Oh, good. Well, that's why you're here. I mean, this is the talk show, folks. you call here to talk. You know, that's what I want. All right. Back to the article. This insensitive practice by Volags and their associated agencies imposes a significant burden on unsuspecting host communities. Hopefully that's not going to be Santa Rosa, but we're trying to stop that. Anyway, as the Senate report said, these newcomers place demands, sometimes significant, on local schools, police, hospitals, and social services. Local governments are often burdened with the weight of addressing the unique assistance refugees require, yet they rarely have an official role in influencing how many refugees are resettled by local voluntary agencies, that'd be like Catholic Charities, and that's my main focus today, and often are not even informed in advance that new, quote, residents will be arriving. As the resettlement groups persist in their revenue-producing refugee activities, their purported love of neighbor gets, you know, palmed off on others to see through and deal with for the long term. As the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report concluded, while offering safe haven to persecuted populations throughout the world remains a humanitarian imperative, the administration should avoid biting off more than local communities are capable of chewing. Especially in a difficult economic climate, force-feeding refugees into a broken system is proving to be detrimental to the longer-term interests of refugees and to the cities that receive them. Think about that in a COVID economy, all right? And think about 2 million people who are going to be in our country this year. Think about all that. More and more cities have second thoughts as refugees have brought problems and caused costs to skyrocket. And this is going to get worse, all right? The problem has become so bad that some localities have sought a moratorium on taking in refugees. Fort Wayne, Indiana, one of American cities overwhelmed by refugee resettlement, and a case study in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee report, has lodged such a request for a halt on refugees. Manchester, New Hampshire has made a similar request for the same kinds of reasons. Detroit has adopted a requirement that it will only take refugees with close family already there. Other overwhelmed communities, thanks to forcible refugee residents, include Clarkston, Georgia, Lynn, Massachusetts, and Omaha, Nebraska. The Tennessee legislature last year passed the Refugee Absorptive Capacity Act, the first ever state law trying to give local communities some say in resettlement decisions. All right. Conclusion. Refugee resettlement has become quite remunerative for the voluntary agencies that now receive government payment for this line of business. Some 11 private refugee bureaus receive about $37 million in government funding in fiscal year 2011 alone. Okay, that's over $1 billion now, just to let you know where we're going, you know, from 2011. 10 years later, it's over $1 billion, all right? I'll get that in an article in the third hour. The constant focus on amassing taxpayer money in large quantities seems to compete mightily as motivation for religious refugee agencies, which, before taxpayers could be tapped, appeared truer to the biblical imperatives to love your neighbor as yourself and to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. When money becomes an idol, it skews focus and perspective. The temptation naturally becomes to put preservation of government funding sources ahead of maintaining pure motives and focusing on the charitable work. Volex and their local partner organizations have a vested financial interest in raising the number of refugees admitted for resettlement in the United States. The more refugees taken in by this country, the more cases assigned to each Volex, this voluntary agency there. The more refugee cases a Volex is assigned, the more money the federal government hands over to the private agency. In some ways, the model resembles those charities that spend inordinately on fundraising and administration instead of on actually helping needy people. Last paragraph. Clearly, refugee resettlement policy and programs from top to bottom are overdue for congressional scrutiny and reform. These organizations, including religious ones, receiving federal monies deserve close assessment. It is morally incumbent on religious refugee bureaus to examine their own hearts. As Christ said, it is impossible to serve both God and money. That's Luke 16:13. Their efforts would be a lot more honest and effective and a lot less harmful to their fellow countrymen and communities if they returned to reliance on private funding alone. Wow. I think Pianki's left us for a little bit. Gene, do you have a comment? And then I'll get to Shelby.
No, I don't have a comment, but it's sad. Well, I do actually. The money that they're given, I'd be interested to know how much money is actually put into helping those that they bring over and how much do they just pocket?
Meaning well, $700 of $1,800.
Because you can't tell me they're using all that money to help them settle and things like that.
No, remember earlier in the article, $700 of the $1,800 per refugee is for them. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a payoff. Yep,
yeah.
Sure is. Yeah. Hang on, let's get to Shelby.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Finette takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
Good morning, Shelby. How are you?
Good morning, Greg.
All right. Yeah, you kind of walked into you walked into every Tuesday by the time you get here. Things are crazy. And of course, we started an hour earlier, too. So we've been going over the show today, Catholic Charities and Taxpayer-Funded Illegal Alien Resettlement. Do you, in your part of Florida, before we get started in travel, do you have any particular communities that are there? Are you close to the Cuban, Little Havana at all? Which to me is a perfect example of folks coming here to help our country in helping themselves. They actually help us because of the hard work and assimilation to America, as opposed to other communities that come here to be isolated communities and bring their own, practices of dependence, on their government to our government and have us pay for them. Do you have any examples of either side that you can tell me about near you?
No, thankfully, I haven't had to deal with that yet. It was interesting when you were mentioning Lee, Massachusetts is kind of the area that I'm from. I was like, wow, okay. That's very interesting. I don't go back to Massachusetts very often. However, I'm sure it'll be a shock, because things are changing so rapidly now. I've never been a proponent of big immigration because I find it, I deal with this personally on a very personal level because most of my family and my husband are from Canada. So we all had to do it the very hard and very expensive way.
My parents did. I mean, when I came here to the United States, I came from, in fact, they couldn't get into the United States originally. That's why they went to Australia, to try and create a better situation for themselves there and be eligible to come here. So 4 years in Australia, and then we came to the United States, in the early 70s. And it's funny that if you're in Lynn, I actually went to high school in Lexington, Massachusetts.
Oh,
so
wow.
we could have passed by each other and never known. Wow.
Totally. So I've never been a fan. I don't understand this mentality of just letting people in to let people in. It just seems crazy to me. Mm-hmm. That people think it's a good idea seems even crazier to me. I have some friends that we differ very much, but in our viewpoint, they don't have anything as personal as having loved ones have to come in the correct way. And
most people don't. Immigration is not the problem. It's the blurring of immigration, calling illegal immigrants when they're really illegal aliens.
Right, exactly.
Most people are in favor of of a merit-based immigration system. You come here, you immigrate because you're going to add something to the country. It's always, that's always been the policy. It was the policy when my folks came here, was that you know, we had to prove we were going to add something to the country. You couldn't just come in here because you wanted to, because you want a better life. No, you have to make a better life for Americans by coming here. And that makes sense. And then we could take all kinds of folks under that circumstance. It's the ones that come here to drain out the system and causes all the problems. That's what I object to. And I think you do too.
Well, there's several things. I think probably just a couple examples that are pretty tangible here. We have a lot of people that are clearly illegal immigrants that are doing the lawns. We have a big HOAs in Florida, so we have a lot of lawn because we live in a beautiful green state, as you know. And so there's a lot of workers that are illegal, and they don't pay them enough. And somehow they
shouldn't pay them anything.
Right. So the argument from my friends that are for all immigration as much as possible, we have enough, they think. And I'm like, well, you need to go look in India where you don't have enough. Like, it's just if you let everybody in, nobody has enough. And you're basically giving away what should be your children's and your children's children's, like, comfort and safety. You know, it's not affecting you. It won't affect you this year. It'll be 10 years from now. So anyway, they basically say, well, no Americans want that work. And that irritates me so much because that is not the truth. It's just that they don't want the work for $5 an hour, which is what they're paying these poor people. And of course, they shouldn't be paying them $5. And they shouldn't be, you know, exploiting their situation either. All of that is wrong. And yes, the Americans would do that work if it was being paid the regular wage, but it should be paid. I mean, it's hard labor for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was the right price, for sure, Americans would do it. There's no doubt about it. But they aren't being paid.
Before we had illegal aliens, America did that work, you know, and they always have.
So,
you're right on. Yeah.
But I find fascinating, as I say, so now, okay, so let's just play your game and make them American. Now they're making, it'll be $15 an hour is minimum wage in Florida, I think, next year.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're making no less than 15. So you've tripled their wage, and now the companies have to pay that, which is the right thing to do. Don't get me wrong. I'm not mad about that. However, what do you think is going to happen to our rates? I mean, of course, they're going to go up considerably, right? Because the cost of manpower, so this grand idea you have of it's just going to be, you know, the same for you. And honestly, I had this conversation with someone close to me, and they're very, very democratic in the party. And her answer was, no, they've done studies. Our rates won't go up. I was like, how is that an actual answer?
Intellectually
they have done studies. I don't care what study they think they did, but the rates will be going up. And, you know, of course, I've been to places where homelessness and, you know, just too much population is a real problem. And, you know, the trickle down, it does create a bigger divide of the haves and the have-nots. And that is never a good thing. Like, I'm all about social services for people to get back on their feet. It's a balancing act. I don't think that, you know, there shouldn't be social services because, of course, you need that in order to make sure that there aren't people so desperate that they want to just do anything they can to survive. And that's a very human normal instinct. So you have to have some social services in place that are truly there to help people that have, you know, we all have life things happen, whether it's emotional, physical, you know, just sometimes health wise. And it's just, you need that, but it gets to this point where when you overpopulate and we are like, they say, oh, we're immigrants. We were, but now we're pretty full. And you know, it's like,
this is not a nation of immigrants.
Right.
Not a nation of immigrants.
Canada,
it's like 14%.
We were open to it. Canada's open to it now, too. They have, you know, as much land mass as we have, and they have 3 million. What is it, 3 million versus 33 million that we have? They have as many people as in California for the population?
No. Australia's about, I think, probably close to 30 million now. Canada's a little more than that, maybe 35. We can look. Actually, Gene, if you could. Gene,
I'm sorry. I'm always off of, we're 330 million. They're 33 million. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We can check the population. California is close to, I think, 30 million themselves.
Yeah,
I know
exactly.
The Bay Area has
so
9 million.
The population of California is what is the population of all of Canada. So Canada's huge in immigration because they need people. They need people to make a country to, you know, hopefully get it going from the base up and figure out what they're going to be good at making.
Where are they
going to
live?
Or...
It's cold.
Well,
you get up northern Canada.
Cold.
I mean, it's, you know, I mean, most of the, how much of the Canadian population is within, you know, 50 miles of the U.S. border? I'd say like 90%.
Yes, it is. That is correct. That is an actual stat we just saw.
Okay.
But
I was
there's,
guessing.
I mean, there's ways to make it livable now. Nowadays, with all the technology, it's totally ways to make it livable. But they're still opening borders. And I tell people, like, you know, the immigration thing, that's all true until it's full. And then the problem becomes that you don't have any more resources for people. And it becomes real taxing on the people that live there. And it shouldn't be... It shouldn't be looked upon like it's an easy fix. People should all go to places that have these problems with overpopulation just to see what happens to society and how you have to live. And it's and the governments, of course, they all get leaner and more greedy, and it's very sad. Like the future does not look good.
Well, and this is why I say, you know, hopefully we'll create a nice little revolution here and be able to change certain things. But when you'd be the perfect person to ask about this because, you know, you've traveled, I mean, I've traveled a fair bit, you've traveled a lot. And when you look around the world's populations, you know, every one of these countries that have mass populations of poor people, you know, if they simply had freedom, if they adopted freedom like we did, like we used to have, you know, before what's going on now, there's nothing, and I made this point earlier, there's nothing magical about freedom that it only has to happen in the States. That doesn't make any sense. But these other countries, they don't do it. The people don't rise up. The governments are headed by elites that are power hungry. They love power more than they love life itself. And they deal in corruption and they hoard the resources and they stifle the people and they take away all the creativity, all the entrepreneurial spirit. The human spirit is not allowed to flourish, you know, almost anywhere. And the problem is, that's the first problem. The second problem is we can't take all those people here. There is not enough of America. There are not enough American taxpayers to support all the people that would love to come here. So you have to limit that. And the way it's supposed to be limited is merit-based. In other words, you apply to come here legally, and if you're accepted, you're accepted because you're going to add something. You know, immigration is not for immigrants. People don't understand that. Immigration is for Americans to make our life and our country better by bringing in people that will add skills, add jobs, add companies, add all kinds of things that are good for us. That's the whole point of it. We don't bring people in to make their lives better because there's an infinite number of people. But different countries that you've seen, you know, the masses of people, there's a lot of people that could benefit from freedom, and yet their governments don't do it. Any insight in some of the places you've been? What do you think?
Well, I think that it's pretty much the same movie, you know, that same movie you see again and again, that government has good intentions. I do truly believe a lot of times that is the way in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But there's, you know, the kickbacks and the opportunities and the low cost that you pay people in government, it kind of lends itself to being attractive to the wrong people because they see the opportunity there. And look, I just did the mayor's campaign, right? And you know what the mayor of my city made per year? $12,000 a year.
Wow.
And yeah. And, it was she finally got the commissions to triple that, which is fabulous because I'm like, I don't want my mayor to make $12,000 a year. I'm basically have no more private. I don't even care what the workload entails, but you're basically on the hook for everything that goes wrong. You have no privacy. You have, you know, your face, you're like a, you really are losing your anonymity, which is got to have a price tag on it. I mean, I'm a cruise director.
I'll find out.
On every cruise, and it's really a lot. Like I, you know, you see inside what it's like to be one of these stars, and it's like, oh my gosh! Like, thank God it's just for a week, you know. But it really is sad to me that that's even the way it's ran. Because how could you really be doing your best and living a life and giving it all you got and being a stand-up person unless you're filthy rich and you're doing it just for the fun of it? Or you're doing it to get other side deals, you know, which is which is a normal thing if you're only going to be paid, you know, 12 grand for giving up your year for the next 3 years.
That's called a conflict of interest. Yeah.
It's just unfortunate that they put these, the government just seems to always be in the same situation. It's always becoming corrupt because there is this great TED Talk I would recommend everybody check out called Corporate Psychopaths and why the
What's
type
that?
Of person. It's like, and it's a TED Talk. It's about why a type of person gets to these positions. And in government, I think, is very, very similar to the corporate structure of the big boys club. And, you know, you don't really like how you see behind the curtain, you realize these people are no smarter than you are, but they're making huge ass decisions that have huge implications, and they're making insane amount of money from one way or another, kickbacks, stocks, you know, having inside knowledge, inside trade or whatever. But they just don't seem to care how it's going to affect all the little guys. They just don't have that in them. They don't have that normal empathy that you would figure most people have. And one of the things that they said, the people that end up at the top with this corporate psychopathic brain, is that basically they cause chaos right below them. They cause chaos in order for people to be just in this like craziness, so that they're just, you know, filling holes in a canoe, so to speak, that are never going to be, you know, the canoe is sinking, but they just keep making
crisis
little
management.
Holes. And right. Yeah. So they put everybody else in that position so they can make their big chess moves behind their backs because they're so distracted. And to me, it's all the same. You know, you see it so big in the Caribbean, for instance. I mean, it's just so sad, like, seeing the governments the way they work, that the opportunities they have to have everybody have a very good place, and they could really make it something amazing, the opportunities, the land, the beauty, the tourism. But yet you see constant, it's because they're so small, it's so easy to see the corruption in government and the disparities between the people. And there's no need for that. But I truly believe it's the same old movie. It's just these governments mean to do good. A couple of people mean to do good. But then they see these opportunities, and it's just too attractive. And it you know, you get the right people in place that are never going to leave. They're just going to keep causing the chaos, and they're going to keep keeping for themselves. And they don't look back. They let the shit burn behind them, and they don't have a worry in the world. And that's just the way I see most governments going. And lobbying in the United States is probably, for me, the one. Lobbying and the media are the two things that people should be focused on instead of all the details of whatever else is going on. Why is that allowed? It's paying off politicians. It should absolutely never be allowed to pay off politicians. That's insane, asinine. And then, of course, you've got the fact that, all in all, you know, the people are just greedy. I mean, it's just people are selfish. People are always making selfish moves at the top, no matter what. They're just, you have to assume that most people are making a choice in a silo, and it's selfish. And that's, you know, where we end up going with our government, too.
Yeah. Now, this is fascinating. That's just a huge series of points you made. We do have a bill on our website, writeyourlaws.com, that does actually do what you're saying, which is it takes all money out of political campaigns, that you cannot make financial contributions to any candidate for office. You can spend money advertising on their behalf, but you can't give any money directly, so they're not directly beholden. Yeah, they're still going to be, you know, through the influence of the you know, the fact that they're being advertised for or doing work on behalf of a candidate, but at least it's a separation. It's a start to separate, you know, the candidates from the money.
Great idea. I mean, it's a start, like you said.
It's all part of our campaign reform. Then we abolish parties. That's the next thing to do, too. You abolish parties because the parties tend to regulate. They take all the individual decision-making away from the members of Congress in particular, where they have to, Democrats all vote their party. And you don't know whether they want to do it or not, but they have to vote their party because the party gives them the campaign money to run the next time. The party gives them their chairmanships of the committees. The party, you know, basically keeps them, has the coalitions and keeps them alive and has control of the media. You know, so that if you don't follow the party line, you know, you lose, and they want that position
of power.
So it's the Faustian bargain. It's the deal with the devil. You know, do you follow the party line or do you lose? And that's not a choice that anybody should have to make. So if you abolish parties, if you make all the votes for speaker and the committee chair as a secret ballot, you know, if you take the money out so that nobody can contribute directly to a campaign, but of course now the media can have the folks on, like, you know, my show's always open to political candidates. You know, we've had a few on the show already. You know, Jerome Bell was the last one who was on, who's a candidate for Congress in Virginia. So this show is completely open, but I'm going to ask you questions, okay? And that's just the way it works. But you've got to, what you said is really significant. I want to highlight that it doesn't matter the religion, the culture, the language, you know, the location, you know, the size of the country, whether it's a Caribbean island or like China. Power, all power corrupts. The love of power, I think, is the greatest evil on the planet today. There used to be the love of money. Money's not enough anymore. You can get money through power, but the concentration of power, I think, is just unbelievable in the way that it works. I want to get that thing. There's something I've been doing too. We have an Action Radio Mind project for anybody that wants to join it. If I haven't got all you guys in it, then please feel free. But there's a YouTube channel called Academy of Ideas, which talks about, it started, I found this on America's Frontline Doctors, when they talk about mass psychosis and how you can convince an entire population to do whatever you want them to. It's fascinating insight into the human mind. And so the Mind Project is specifically for those purposes. I got Josie on the line. I've got Pianki on the flanky. Pianki, you're live. You want to throw a comment in here first? Then we'll get to Josie in a little bit.
Well, according to, you talk about this aid that goes to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a few. In 2016, Guatemala received $267 million.
Mm-hmm.
Under Trump, he cut it down to $34 million. El Salvador, $75 million.
Mm-hmm.
You got $128 million to Honduras, and it just goes on and on and on. Now, here's the thing: if you're giving these countries these funds, this aid, mm-hmm. to alleviate the problems that people reportedly are running from, then why do we keep giving it to them? Because you give money to the country, then when they come here, you gotta provide them with perks, which mm-hmm. American taxpayers pay to the tune of $118 billion per year. It just mm-hmm. doesn't make sense.
No, and you're looking for things to make sense that will never make sense. You know, because the idea of Congress is to spend money. That's what the F-35 fighter is about. It's a turkey. It doesn't work. It's a disaster. And yet they're spending, it's the most expensive program we have. Why? Because the object of Congress is to spend money. Now, foreign aid, I don't know if it still is true, but it used to have a contingency on it that you had to spend that foreign money on American corporate goods. Caterpillar, for example, was a huge beneficiary of foreign aid because they make all the farm equipment. So they're able to help a country, you know, country X, you know, produce more farm, you know, more agricultural products. Okay, so there are strings attached to foreign aid, and of course there should be. One of them is, don't vote against us in the UN if we're paying, you know, your freight. But here's a question for Shelby, and I don't know if you can answer this because it's kind of a big question. But have you ever seen a country before and after U.S. foreign aid, and did you see that it made any difference in that country? You know, a place that you visited a few times. And I don't know if you know a case, because you probably weren't charting the foreign aid, but can you think of an example of any country? Go ahead.
You
know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm sorry. You know, when I was traveling extensively, like out to China and places like that, I was
right.
really green, and I really was just absorbing the culture and the vibrations, mm-hmm. and my mind was really, really open. I didn't have much thought about what I was looking for. I just was absorbing it, and I think a lot of it. I mean, the only time I remember specifically even thinking about what it meant to be somewhere like in China and what the U.S. and government had to do with anything there was when I was watching, we had these little TVs in the crew area, like we're talking early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
and really small ones, like back in the day. And BBC was on, and it was telling me, I think it was Dalian, I can't remember, but it was a small port in China. And it was saying how horrible it was, and there was like this newscaster and wind, and it looked like war was about to happen. And I was in that port, and it was nothing like that. And I was like, oh dear, that's so strange. Like, I'm being told from the news that this is the worst thing place ever, and here I am in this nice little port where nothing was really going on.
Mm-hmm. So that's actually really insightful. It's like the hotels that are supposedly filled with COVID victims, and you know, then people have gone there and, you know, filmed the waiting rooms. It's like, there's like one person in the corner, you know. Don't lie to us.
Yeah, no,
it's just media.
I mean, media is just, it really needs to be held accountable. It's disgusting. Like, it's just, it's not right. It's not fair. I think it's the biggest problem, like for you on your show, when, you know, you don't like, it's so hard for you to understand why people would think these certain ways. It's like,
no, it's not hard for me to understand at all. I just don't accept it. I don't accept the way they understand, but I understand them.
But they're just listening to the news, and that's not a crime. They think they're being told the truth. Why would they're they're not in Dalian, China, seeing what I'm seeing? Like, yeah. They just assume it's the truth, which is okay.
But you can't
do that
anymore.
You can't assume
it's the truth anymore. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Jesse, I agree with you that you can't, but you should be able to.
Well, you should. Well, you should be able to do a lot of things.
Good morning.
You should be able to live in a free country, you know. Just, and that's not happening either. We should be a country free of illegal aliens, and that's not happening. Chelsea, I got a question for you before you get started. Can you stay past the top of the hour? Because I want to make. We haven't even talked travel with Shelby yet. We're sort of a little bit behind here. Do you have some extra time, or do you have to go at the top of the hour?
Yeah, I have a little bit of time.
Okay, good. All right. So, Shelby, do you have any particular travel news? Is anything happening? The cruises, I had a friend that I – or actually the person I ran into that said they just came back from a cruise that they're vaccinated. It was Royal Caribbean, and they had, I think, 800 people on a 4,000-person ship. Of course, they had it to themselves. You know, they had a great time.
Right.
Is anything happening in cruises right now? I mean, it sounds like they're starting to get back going again.
Yeah, if you're vaccinated, they're going, and they are definitely going at limited capacity. I will tell you one of the more interesting things that I found out for my friends that are not vaccinated that also want to cruise. MSC is apparently opening up in November for vaccinated and unvaccinated. Yes, MSC is the only cruise line that has been going through COVID. They mostly out of Italy, ironically enough, after that whole thing passed in Italy. And anyway, they had been going the whole time without vaccines because there were no vaccines. And they have a pretty, you know, they've been laying the groundwork for everybody, basically doing testing before they get on, I think testing during, and then testing before they disembark. And they've had great success with that. And so I was kind of happy for everyone. As I, you know, I have a lot of friends on both sides of this coin here. And so I was really happy to hear that they were going to be doing something for the unvaccinated guests too. So, and I think it's very wise because everybody else is really pumping vaccinations only. I think it's wise for one cruise line to step out to the side, and hopefully there'll be, you know, an opportunity for the opposing side and a safe way. They're being tested, so they know that, and you know, because you can get it even when you have vaccination, it really is, I feel like, the best way. Just test them before they get on board and test it before they leave. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just interesting that we test so much of this one thing, and it is, you know, so survival. It's such a high rate of individuals just curing it within themselves, you know, with no particular symptoms whatsoever. It's fascinating. I divide the world a little differently. You know, to me, it's vaccine injured and DNA normal. I mean, that's how I categorize it as we're breaking up here. Looks like we got someone else joining us here in a little bit. I think Bianchi's back on the line.
And I have to run. I'm Shelby.
Okay.
You're fabulous. Thank you so much for today, and have a great day, guys. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Shelby. You know, you can't leave until you say, I'm Shelby, you're fabulous. I mean, that makes my
I'm week, Shelby, so. You're fabulous. Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you, Shelby. Appreciate your report. Chelsea. But I don't have theme music for you yet.
Good
I apologize.
Morning.
I've been trying to in fact I just made our Santa Rosa theme from last night. So I'm gonna get you a theme. And we will have music for you, you know, fairly soon here. I might even make one for Bianchi. You know, Reverend Bianchi's, you know, Church of the, you know, the Great Spirit of something. I'll figure out. He's still on the line. He's probably laughing. So what's going on?
We might have a friend on the line, but I'm not sure if that's her calling. She's an RN, but anyway.
Okay, Jean, can you check that out, please?
Report, and maybe we'll talk to her soon. But let me get my report a little bit, and we'll move on. In Chile, South America, all the Haitians are arriving in Chile. They're
what?
Well organized. Yes, this is what's happening. The Haitians are heading to Chile, South America. With a organization, Migrant Services, called Jesuit, and the George Soros, the United Nations, they're all in it. They're all in it like they've been doing to other countries. And so that's the plan going on right now.
Okay.
So each migrant from Haiti are getting $2,000 to take off from Chile to come to America. So it's well organized, this whole situation. And they all have ID. And what they're doing is the United Nations and the group are telling it, throw the stuff in the garbage. So So they're finding thousands and thousands of IDs that the Haitians and people from other countries too are throwing in the woods. So when they walk in our border, they don't have no ID, nothing. And
that's so significant. I want to just have to stop you for a second, because this is really critical for people to understand. And for me, this is confirmation for me too. And it's on the line. And so we're going to get to her as soon as you're ready. So let me know. But the idea that people are, quote, undocumented immigrants or undocumented workers or undocumented anything, everybody in South America and Central America is documented. They all have birth certificates. They just don't bring them.
They all do.
Is that how it works? Yeah. So they're all registered with hospitals, churches, the state, the province they live in. How are people registered?
Yeah, absolutely, Greg.
Okay.
They all have ID. You cannot leave Nicaragua or Honduras or El Salvador or any country without having an ID leaving your country. Everybody has an ID.
So you have to have an ID to leave.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Wait a minute. You have to have an ID to leave, but you don't have to have one to come to the United States? Figure that one out. Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. When they do come to the United States and present that ID, how do you know it's legitimate? And that has been found out not to be legitimate. You contact the country. Nobody, the phone doesn't pick up. Their records are still on paper-based. They don't have digital records. So that's the one thing that you can buy on the black market is people's IDs.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Exactly.
Okay.
You're absolutely right, Bianchi. So the corruption with our Democrat government, it is out of control, because they're allowing all this. There's a lot of criminals coming in, and a lot of Muslim terrorists are coming in too. Together, they're blending in. And a lot of illegals that we have deported in the past, they're coming in too. So we're going to have so much in our hands. I don't know what we're going to do. I was talking about it with my husband last night, and he said, how
I know what we're going to do.
Donald Trump returns.
No, I've outlined it.
How are we going to return all these people back?
No. You're not going to round them up and capture them, because the federal government's not going to do that. But the things we've come up with here, asset forfeiture, illegal alien-free zones, using the 14th Amendment, you know, protection of the state boundaries and the county boundaries against illegals. You make it impossible by taking all their stuff. You know, make citizenship tests for bank accounts, credit cards, schools, jobs, you know, all this kind of stuff, and use asset forfeiture to take away the stuff from people, you know, who are allowing illegal aliens to stay here. We got your guest, so as soon as you're ready, I want to bring on Lita.
Yes, I'm ready, and my friend, she's on the other end right now. I invited her. I was sharing the radio station last night, which all of us should be doing the same thing with our friends.
Yeah.
I can hardly wait for you to grow big, and you're going to be it, Greg. Some of the radio stations yours is totally different, because we write our own laws in our station. And we can do it right on the spot, I was so excited when you started this. So
I appreciate
all right,
that. Yeah, and we might get our first law passed. In fact, we're looking at our illegal alien free zone bill passing in the county commissioners in Santa Rosa Thursday. They're going to hear it, and they're going to probably take it up the next month and hopefully pass it. Mm-hmm. But this is a model for the country. Anyway, we can talk more about that in the next hour. We've got Lita, who's a nurse and who is joining us, a friend of Josie. So, Josie, I'm going to let you kind of take over and introduce Lita, and let's see what you guys have.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, good morning, chica. I call it.
Good morning. Good morning. It's a blessed, great morning today.
Well, glad to have you on the show. Welcome. Welcome to Action Radio. And as Josie said, we are the only show, the world's only show, which actually has a citizen legislature, where we use this show to create citizen legislation, put it on our website, writeyourlaws.com, and then everybody's free to send it to members of Congress, the state legislatures, county commissions, city councils, and school boards, all the way up to the president of the United States. And anybody can do this. Anybody can write a bill. And if it's good enough, we're going to be right behind you. And you never know. One person, you know, the plumber in Arkansas can write a bill that ends up on the president's desk. That's the whole point of our show. So if you want to be an activist, the more you want to do, and you don't even have to use a real name, I don't care, but the more you want to do, the more you can do here at Action Radio. Wow,
yes,
I can make a commercial out of that one. That was good.
Yes, that's one of my goals.
Oh, good. Well,
that's
we're
one of my goals
then.
As a...
Okay.
Yes, thank you. I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much, Greg. Thank you so much, Josie, for inviting me. And I'm so blessed to be able to meet her as a friend and considered part of my family. And she took me in. I am a travel nurse from Texas. I have been working with COVID since pretty much it began, started travel nursing. I am unvaccinated. I have been exposed to COVID. People cough on me. I work in COVID. I make it known to my company that I do not want to be vaccinated. I'm kind of starting to see a shift in discrimination. Anyway, there are many of us nurses not vaccinated.
We can go over this in I don't want you to feel rushed because a lot of talk shows only give you 2 minutes. That's not a restriction here. So the fact that you are, oh, no problem at all. Yeah. So, breathe deep. What we talk about, I want to sort of change the language. Language is very important to me. So I never think of unvaccinated. To me, that's DNA normal. Okay. And if we start introducing terms like that, it changes the debate. So if you say vaccine injured, that implies something very different than vaccinated. Okay. I'm not unvaccinated. I am DNA normal. I have not been altered by a messenger RNA gene, infusion spike protein shot. So we've got a pretty – see, I've been dealing with – just to give you a little history real quick here too. I've been dealing with this since March 2nd, actually since the end of February of 2020, when I first discovered the Dr. Dieter Raoult study that chloroquine kills COVID. We have never said the COVID crisis was real. We have always said there never was a need for a pandemic. It was always curable. It was curable with chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, with zinc, zithromycin. You know, Dr. Zelenko, I had a friend who actually knew him, got us together. He's been on the show. He's a friend of mine now. You know, and this guy is doing amazing work around the world. We've had Dr. Judy Mikovits on. I've been in contact with Harvey Risch at Yale. He's the Yale epidemiologist, and testified before Senator Johnson's committee. So we've been working with this the whole time. We've always said that there was never a need for this. I did a 3-day special on how the vaccine was created years before they created the COVID virus, that the virus is a marketing tool, that this is all about selling the product, that the government, quote, experts are in it for the money. And they're, I called Dr. Anthony Fauci, who's affectionately known around here as Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic drug pusher. Does that sound about right? Lita, what do you think?
Yes. Definitely.
You can use all that. Yeah. Okay.
Because,
so continue with your story.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yes. So there are many of us nurses internally, and even when I worked in other places, they were pressured to get the vaccine from their bosses, and persuaded. And
why? What's in it for the bosses? What's really behind it, do you think?
I have no idea. They're bought into this lie that it's going to help them, but we're seeing patients vaccinated coming in, because I also work in acute rehabilitation. So we get a lot of stroke patients. We get a lot of patients that need rehab from med surg or whatever. And so we are seeing a lot of vaccinated patients. The DNA, the spike.
The DNA normal and vaccine injured. Oh, you don't have to say it. I just use that as an example. But if you get that into your head, vaccine injured. Yeah. Okay. Maybe we could start something here.
Coming in with stroke. They are debilitated.
Blood clots, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Huh. They are debilitated. They are no longer able to function their normal lives anymore.
These were healthy people, right? These are people that were completely functional, healthy, had whatever normal ailments are for their age group. And all of a sudden they get this spike protein infusion injury. And how long after the shot are they developing strokes? Do you have a timeline on that?
It's a good question. I would say within 4 to 5 months, maybe. It just depends on the person. Depends on the person and possible underlying health conditions. It's more for the elderly, it seems like. However, we see young people, too, that were young and had no underlying issues.
See, that's the scary part. Older folks get strokes. That's life. That happens. You know, something's going to get all of us. So I understand strokes in old people, but we don't want the MRI, you know, spike protein infusion to enhance that and make it, you know, come a lot more, you know, more rapidly and more frequent. But young people shouldn't get strokes. They shouldn't have myocarditis. They shouldn't have inflamed hearts. They shouldn't have spike proteins infecting every organ of their body. Shouldn't be crossing the blood-brain barrier. Shouldn't be doing any of these things that are happening. This is a problem. This affects all age groups. Josie?
And you know, Greg, and my friend, my mom's cousin, in February, she had a stroke right after the vaccine. So it doesn't have to happen 4 or 5 months later, but I'm hearing more and more as I see nurses every day in my store, nurses and doctors like her coming in my business and sharing. Some of the nurses have told me that as soon as they pull the needle, the people are going into seizure in the nursing homes and stroke like right away or heart attack.
Lita, are you finding that?
Yeah. Yes.
Have you heard stories about that?
Well, I don't know because I don't get them at the very beginning. It depends because right now I work acute rehab. So a lot of times they're already gone through surgery or they already gone through whatever. And then if I don't do the admission, some of the questions I cannot see, like the COVID vaccine, you know, question I cannot see unless I dig deep into their records to see which vaccine and when. So
are there different ones? Are you seeing different results from different shots? Is the Johnson one that was around much? They're all causing the same problems.
It
all same. Do they all have the same basic ingredients or whatever you call those things in there?
I'm not able to see that because we do not administer the vaccine. We just get the end results of them or post-COVID patients recovering.
Oh.
Can
you get me an insert?
Can we
get an insert with all the information on it? Maybe get it to Josie somehow? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I wish I could because they at the hospital, we suggest that they get their vaccine with their primary physician. Because, you know, they have to get a second one because they have to get a second dose.
Why doesn't it work the first time? This is messenger RNA. This is instructing cells on what to do. It replicates. It replicates in the trillions. Why do you need a second shot? That doesn't make sense.
I agree. And it's very scary because, you know, and the thing I also deal with right now as well is, the post-COVID patients, I'm having to, when I have time, because I'm doing like 4 different jobs as a nurse, and it's very stressful. When I have the time, I'm able to work with their minds and their spirits because they still have the spirit of fear and anxiety. Even just to do any little exercise to move from the bed to the chair, they start hyperventilating. They get fear inside them. And so I have to coach and teach them and use the word of God and tell them, you know, if you believe in God, use scripture to help them overcome that fear because the fear is still
fear of
in
what?
Them.
Fear of what?
I don't know. Fear of dying.
So
fear of not
they're
being
afraid,
able to breathe.
Everybody's afraid of dying. The question is, you know, how strong? Because are they more afraid before they got the vaccine or are they more afraid after?
That's a good question. I guess they're afraid they can't breathe because they're still on oxygen. Some of them, you know, very few are off the oxygen, but they still get short of breath. And just like I had a patient, her lung sounds were clear. And I said, so why are you fearful? What is going on? She said, I don't know why. I just feel scared. I can't breathe. I said, listen. Do you believe in a higher power? She says, yes. And she patted her Bible next to her bedside. I didn't see it because it was covered with a blanket. And I said, listen, you've got to believe in something higher than yourself because you're allowing your emotions of fear and anxiety to overcome you. You have to say no to this. Your lungs are clear. And so it's a mixture of things. You really have to be strong and believe in the Lord and his word because his word is a sword. It's a living truth. And she spit out a scripture right away. I said, there you go. Use that one. I do not have the spirit of fear, but of, you know, and then that's what you use every time you get afraid. I have to use these with my post-COVID patients because they still have that fear in them.
Post-COVID, these are COVID recovered patients?
COVID recovery, yes.
Okay. And you're allowed to talk about God and spirituality in your hospital or medical practice?
I do it anyway. I don't care. I do it anyway.
you're on the right show then. You're among friends. I like you already.
That's the need that I see at the moment. That is the need I see at the moment. So therefore, I go and I do it. And so that.
Well, good for you.
And then it changes their whole demeanor. It changes their whole mindset.
Well, we have to replace fear with something. This is the big problem is people are afraid. They've been afraid, so they wear masks. They're afraid, so they get, you know, the spike shots. They're afraid of everything. They're afraid of who knows what. It doesn't matter what they're afraid of, but there's so much fear in this country right now, and there's no reason for it. You know, we're Americans. We're not supposed to be afraid. We're the land of the free and the home of the brave. You know, those words mean something.
Hey, Greg.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, Greg. I was at church Sunday, and a new lady from up north just moved here, a very Christian lady, older lady.
Liberal.
And we started talking, and before you know it, we got into the vaccine, and she goes, I'm vaccinated. And then she goes, did you get the vaccine? I said, heck no, I did not. She said, oh, my God, I better stay away from you. And I was like, what?
Yeah, in fact, you should say, you should say stay away from me because you don't want her shedding spike proteins and getting you sick.
Exactly.
Try that on them. So that's folks,
they're
listen,
panicking.
We're here to give you the arguments that you need to get through your day. And the first thing is when someone says, oh, I'm vaccinated. Oh, really? Well, stay away from me, please, because I don't want you shedding proteins on me.
Exactly.
Spike proteins. That would freak them out. I want to get
but
back to
I
something before.
I didn't want
to
get
go
into
ahead.
It. In
no,
church,
I understand.
So I just,
yeah.
I just
but
any, goodbye,
anybody comes from
blessing.
The north, tell her, unless she's a conservative, tell her to go back home, please. We don't want her here. Just kidding.
yeah, I know.
Lita, I want to get to something you said earlier because, you know, we kind of skipped over it, but you mentioned that you work with COVID patients all the time. You know, you haven't had a spike protein infusion and you're doing just fine. And do you take like hydroxychloroquine or quercetin? I mean, you don't have to tell me. This is personal, but it's up to you. But if you wanted to let us know if you take any of the Zelenko protocols or ivermectin or anything like that. So I take quercetin because hydroxychloroquine is prescription. If I need it, I'm going to get a prescription. But right now I don't. So I take quercetin, vitamin C, vitamin D3, and zinc. You know, every day. And the reason I do it, I do it now, not before. I do it now because I don't want the spike proteins. I'm protecting myself against the vaccine injured shedders. That's why I'm doing it.
Yes,
do you personally, or have you ever, or does it make a difference in dealing with?
Yes,
okay, go ahead.
I will share my secret.
Oh, please do.
Okay, and that's
share
perfect.
Away.
When it first started, of course, I always pray because I believe in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and I have a strong Bible-believing faith group of people, and they pray. We pray together, and we're strong in the Lord. Psalm 91. Is the number one prayer I pray before I even walk outside the door.
Okay, what is
one
it? Help me out here.
Psalm 91.
Which is what?
Psalm 91. Oh, I can read it to you if you'd like.
Sure, go ahead.
And I make it personal. I make it personal. She who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge, my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely he will save me from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. And he will cover me with his feathers, and under his wings I will find refuge. His faithfulness will be my shield and rampart. I will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday. 1,000 may fall at my side, 10,000 at my right hand, but it will not come near me. I will only observe with my eyes to see the punishment of the wicked. And if I make the Most High my dwelling, even the Lord God, who is my refuge, then no harm will befall me. No disaster will come near my tent, my home, my land, my children. I say these things, for he will command his angels concerning me to guard me in all my ways. They will lift me up in their hands so that I will not strike my feet against stone. I will tread upon the lion and the cobra. I will trample the great lion and the serpent. Because she loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue her. I will protect her, for she acknowledges my name. She calls upon me, and I will answer her. I will be with her in trouble. I will deliver her and honor her. And with long life, I will satisfy her and show her my salvation. Amen. So let
Amen.
Me share
I feel better already.
Yeah. Let beautiful. Me share a testimony with you because okay. we are at trying times. And these testimonies are meant to be duplicated. If you can Google this, John G. Lake and the Law mm-hmm. of the Spirit of Life. He was a pastor or minister that that lived during the bubonic plague. He prayed Psalm 91, and he took Romans 8:2 to it convicted his spirit, his heart, because it says in Romans 8:2, because through Christ Jesus, the law of life, it's a law. So just like any laws that are written for mm-hmm. man, there are spiritual laws that we must also, because this thing was wickedly made from man, it's demonic. So we must also fight in the spirit.
Well, it makes sense. It's a bioweapon. Yeah. So here's a question for you.
And it's wicked. It's witchcraft.
Well, I have to think about that for a bit. But what I do know is that this is a bioweapon. This is engineered. This is a worldwide marketing extortion and play campaign. I don't understand the logic of this because, you know, the globalists, if they kill off half the world's population, you know, who's going to do their work for them? Who's going to keep them rich? So what they're doing makes absolutely no sense. But, you know, like I say, after the first $1 billion, it's all about accumulating money and power. A hospital like Baptist Hospital or any of the religious hospitals, Catholic hospitals, things like that, have they lost their spiritual component? Have they lost their way in terms of, you know, not only curing the body, but helping the spirit as well, so that the mind-body connection is maintained? Because as we know, stress reduces your immune system. If you feel good, you know, if you think happy thoughts about yourself, if you're connected, if you have a spiritual base, if you don't have fear because you've got an empty space in you where God should be, or any higher power or any other thing that you latch onto and hang onto, if you think you're it and that's it, you know, you're missing half your therapy, half your medicine.
Exactly.
Yeah. So do you see, have the church hospitals lost their way? What do you think?
I worked for.
You don't have to mention names.
I worked for. Yes, I'm not going to say any names, but yes,
no
I
names.
Worked for
yeah.
hospitals,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. and they have basically allowed the politics of the healthcare take over, and it mm-hmm. saddened my heart because that is part of the healing process, mind, body, spirit. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that, and I work as that as a nurse as part of my. I feel my duty also as a Christian to put the spirit part in there because it does help overcome a lot. Like I said, I gave you the example of the fear, anxiety. They had to take their mind off of themselves and put mm-hmm. it on to something higher than them. So, yes, we are overwhelmed as nurses. We are overwhelmed. Like I said, I was telling Josie, I'm having to do all these other jobs. Of being a respiratory therapist, kitchen mm-hmm. help, passing out the trays and help feeding and being a CNA and also kind of taking some of the doctor's like jobs that I have to be certified in certain assessments that are above my scope of practice
wow.
and not get paid for these things. We're not getting paid for these extra duties. And so it's so stressful on the nurses. The loud noises of even quietness is needed for healing. The hallways are full of noise, sirens, call bells going off all the time. Our phones, our iMobiles that we communicate always so noisy. I have to go to my car to take my 30-minute break and just have quietness in between the 12, 13-hour shift. That's my way of staying sane to get away from the noise. But imagine the patients having to deal with the noise all the time, constant, while they're there. There's no rest. There's no peace.
I remember when I had...
Hey, I have a question.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
I'll
save mine.
Greg.
Okay.
Yeah. What about, are they still allowing family members to come when they're doing rehab, or you know how they've been keeping the family away from their loved ones?
Yes, we are allowing some family members. They're supposed to be one at a time. If they have COVID, they are not allowed to visit, of course. And I also wanted to add, Greg, that in the beginning, mm-hmm. when I first started with this, you know, working with Cole, or when I realized, this is going on,
mm-hmm.
I first started with freshly squeezed lemonade. I would get three lemons, one cup of stevia, and make a gallon of freshly squeezed lemonade. Me and my son would drink it. Then when I started traveling.
What, every day?
I got.
Kidding.
Every day.
Oh, wow.
And, of course,
gallon?
I didn't know about the zinc. I didn't know about the vitamin D3. Now I do take Immune Max, which is a nature-made like packet that you put in your water bottle, and it's 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C, 20 milligrams of zinc, and vitamin D. I drink that every day before when I get up.
Good.
I drink it every day, and I pray, of course. I do my quiet time with the Lord and meditate.
Well, you have to do both.
But,
you know, God expects you to help yourself. You know, I firmly believe that. I have natural quercetin, 500 milligrams, which is the non-prescription hydroxychloroquine, and it has 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. I've got 2,000 international units of vitamin D3, and somewhere upwards of, I think, like 15 milligrams of zinc, but I also have a lot of pumpkin seeds, you know, and I have my zinc elderberry lozenges. So it's probably about 20 milligrams by the time I'm done. So the only thing is, but I didn't think you mentioned, did you mention zinc in there in your collection or vitamin?
Yes, it has zinc already in it.
Okay,
yes.
Well, that's good. Yeah, makes
sense.
And
so, of course, exercise, you want to stay healthy. You want to keep your body healthy. Exercise. Josie and I, we exercise. We get our stress out because you want to stay in good shape, mind, body, spirit.
Right.
Like dancing Zumba with me.
Yes.
We're going to figure out who you are, and we don't want to do that necessarily. So, yeah.
no.
Question. So, but now exercise. Now, think about this, because one of the biggest problems is blood clots. You know, and so does exercise break up blood clots? Does it help the vaccine injured, you know, in certain ways start to recover from their injury? Don't you like the way
That's
a
good question. Because if they're spiked, then their blood's going to apparently be like jello. So I tell my family, the ones that are spiked, I tell them, take an aspirin. Take a baby aspirin every other day or daily or whatever to keep their blood thin. I mean, they don't listen, so I don't know.
You can lead a horse to water,
they
as
don't.
They say. Yeah. And we've heard this before. We had Dr. Judy Mikovits on, who was talking about, and I asked her about blood thinners. I said, are people using the fact that the blood is clotting, are they immediately leaping to blood thinners? And apparently she said they didn't work. Have you had any experience with those? Or because I know you seem to be using aspirin for a similar kind of thing. But specifically, what's going on?
Well, they're prescribing them to the patients.
Say that again?
To the patients. I mean, they are prescribing blood thinners to the patients. I inject them with Lovenox. We give them aspirin. Yeah.
So in other words, the vaccine injured who are having blood clots because of the messenger RNA shot they got, are getting blood thinners to counteract the effects of the shot they probably should never have gotten. And it's like one medicine on top of another medicine, you know, to counteract the first one. That makes no sense.
Yeah.
But you have to do it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you another nasty question.
You were telling me that for the first time that you've been working with COVID, you noticed that you were given like a CPAP to a patient?
Is that what you were telling me last night? No, I just I told you, like, it is the first time I ever gave Plaquenil.
Okay.
That's hydroxychloroquine, right? Isn't that the one of the brand names?
Yes, it was like, oh my gosh, is this?
I was so excited. I was like, it was the first time I gave one to a patient after all this time. And I was so
now,
excited to see that.
How are you able to do that?
Does
it recognize, what's that? It's prescribed?
It was by a doctor. I didn't even pay attention with doctor, but this one patient post-COVID had it prescribed. And I was like, so excited. It was the first time ever, all this time I've been working, that I ever saw that prescribed.
How'd they do?
Wow.
How'd they do with it?
By pill. Uh-huh.
No, did you see a recovery
then,
quickly, or what'd you see?
To be honest with you, Craig,
or
I
too
have
soon
so
to tell.
Many, and it's so busy. Like I said,
yeah.
I'm doing four or five jobs at once.
Wow.
Okay.
No, I understand.
Like I said, I'm the respiratory therapist.
But this is an upper respiratory disease, though. So this is right up your alley. And I got a question for you in a second. But as I understand, Plaquenil is an autoimmune preventive, or it helps with people with autoimmune disease. I happen to know someone with autoimmune diseases, and they take Plaquenil. And then I found out that it's basically hydroxychloroquine with a different brand name. There's probably something else in there as well, so they give it the new name. That's usually how these things work. But it's one way for people to get hydroxychloroquine if it's specifically banned, which raises a question. Let me ask you this question. This is the first disease or virus I've ever seen where the cure is illegal. What the hell's going on? Why can't we get hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin? Or why are they banning the cure? I mean, money's one example. We know it's about money. We know it's about control. But is there anything else that they've actually convinced the population through fear that banning the cure is somehow a good thing? Can you shed any light on that?
I can't explain it except that it's evil. It's the opposite of good.
Okay.
It's evil, and that's why I put that's why I put the spirit in there of God and Jesus Christ, because in the end, it's going to be the word of the testimony of us and the blood of the Lamb. And it's in Revelation 12:11. We overcame the evil. We overcame them by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of our testimony, so that we did not love our lives so much as to shrink from death. So I can't explain that, but I just know that this is pure evil.
But it'd be interesting to ask some of the people that are enforcing these spike mandates, spike protein mandates. It's like, why are you doing this? Why are you enforcing people to take, what do they say? I mean, it'd be interesting to confront them. I'd love to do it.
Oh, yes.
I'll go myself.
I have doctors who believe in this, and they say, well, they believe in the lie. They believe in the lie. They say it doesn't work. It doesn't work. The ivermectin.
But there's studies.
It doesn't work.
There are hundreds
of
studies.
I put it out there too, and they argue. They say it doesn't work. We tried it.
Is their job dependent on the lie?
I have no idea. I mean, these people seem very legit, and they seem like they truly believe that it doesn't work, and that they've talked to other doctors.
I'm no genius or medical scientist, but it didn't take me long. In fact, it took me till the end of February of 2020 to realize this was all a hoax. I had the Dieterold study. I had the Dr. Zelenko study. I did some more reading and research. It really didn't take me a long time to realize that this was a curable. In fact, I did a special. One of my earlier shows, I found out internet search in one afternoon. I found out that viruses kill other viruses. I found out that viruses plus drugs are more effective against other viruses. I found that drugs can act like a laser targeting system, for viruses to grab other, to do that. I found the immune system can be amazingly helped by all kinds of things. And like I say, I just looked it up in one afternoon. I was rather casually doing it on the show, not knowing that that the dictatorship was approaching. This is back March 2nd, and by March 15th, of course, we had 15 days to slow the spread. They slowed it so much, it's still here. So let me ask you the next nasty question.
Uh-huh.
When do you think the pandemic actually ended? And then I'll tell you the date, I think.
Well, to be honest with you, I think it ended when the press started backing off. I guess when they started the vaccines or whatever, to be honest with you, it felt like when the press started up again, that's when the pandemic started up again, because there again, there's that installation of messages constantly of fear. And I can give you another example.
when I was working in another hospital, I had to get my patients on medications of anxiety and blood pressure because they would listen to the news and they would fall asleep with the news on, and it was all negative and fear and, oh, the sky is falling. And I literally had to, and I even talked to one of my, I got onto one of my patients. I was like, listen, we're having to get you on blood pressure medication because you're listening to this. This is no good for you.
CNN.
It's
no, that's documented. That, yeah, the people that listen to, that watch TV before they go to sleep instead of having quiet actually have raised blood pressure. That's very true. So thanks for the confirmation on that. Do you
and
find
anxiety.
That COVID, do COVID patients, you know, who have been vaccine injured and their blood's, you know, turning to jello, which is a really great mental image, by the way. Do you find their blood pressure is higher?
That one I did not observe because a lot of them had underlying high blood pressure anyway. So
did
just
blood pressure
depends.
Go up?
I,
did it go up in patients then? Did you notice that?
It just depends because some of them go down because of the inactivity. Their normal lifestyle totally changed.
Do you try and get people up and active in the hospital? I mean, I had 5 years ago, coming up in October, my fifth anniversary of open heart surgery to repair mitral valve prolapse and a nice little valve trim. Of course, it took them a while to get in there and a while to get back out again. It's rather an invasive surgery, but I was walking the first day. I was walking the day I had surgery. In fact, apparently I was one of the only people to have ever done that, and they were happy with me. I didn't walk far, and we're talking 10 feet.
Wow, that's
but,
amazing.
Yeah, I thought so too, cause especially when I heard I was the only one doing it. But, well, see, I like to flirt with the nurses, so I had to get up and get out, and I wanted to go to the nurse's table. This is my motivation, okay? Josie's probably laughing her butt off right now, but it's true.
Yeah.
Flirting was part of my recovery. It was. That was my motivation.
It gave you motivation, yes.
It sure did. They were cute. But the point is that – but the physical activity, you know, that I was walking, you know, more and you know, more often and greater distances than anybody else on the ward. They were all sitting there, you know, in their hospital bed complaining and being miserable. And I'm up and going around going, hey, this is a great day. Look at this. I've got this vacuum cleaner, you know, I'm dragging around with me. It was cleaning my chest out still when I still had the tubes and all that kind of, you know, I just did it. You know, but I think attitude, and I talked about this with the head nurse, attitude is critical to your recovery. I don't care what the motivation
definitely.
Is, but you know, what do you think? Yeah.
Definitely.
And you're hyper.
Oh,
too,
I agree.
What was
you're
that,
hyper.
Well, yeah.
I said you're hyper, too, so that helps.
No, I know. I heard
hey,
you.
Greg,
Hey,
an RN from the emergency room where she worked, my friend here, he made a remark that it was kind of cool the other day that he was in my store. Yes, he comes every week to give us a report of what's going on. And he's a very popular RN at the ER there. He said,
bring
you know,
on the show.
If
yeah.
we all, he goes, yeah, I wish I could. I don't know if he wants to. He goes, if all of the nurses would quit and walk out, the doctors will not know what to do. He goes,
they
you
wouldn't.
Know? So
they
I said,
wouldn't.
Man, they would not know
that.
What to do with a patient.
Let's talk about that because that's
yes.
critical because as I know hospitals that I'm working with and people I'm working with and secret groups of people I'm chatting with and all the other stuff. In fact, we have a new medical freedom reporter who comes on who is anonymous also for the same reason. You know, what kind of impact is that having with the hospitals nationally if people start walking out?
It would break them.
Okay. So why do they want to do this mandate then? Why are they being so stupid?
It's the brainwashing, you know, like we have to have it. There again, believing the lie over truth. Some of us will not adhere to it because we see what happens with these patients. We're seeing it. And some of us have been working through it, you know, without being jabbed or whatever. a lot of us have survived, had COVID, recovered.
You work with COVID patients all the time. Have you ever been sick? Have you ever had any adverse effects? Have you ever, you know, had any problem at all?
Well, I test
this the evidence.
And I give blood.
And you're not the only one. I've heard this before. There's, you know, there's tons
and
of
I
people working
myself.
With
myself.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What's
I
the
give
best
blood
test?
And they.
What's the best test for a real one that actually gives you a real result?
I go to like CVS or whatever and get tested if I feel like I have some sinus thing going on because, you know, every once in a while we may get some allergies or I may get some allergies. I get tested and it's negative, or when I worked in the nursing home, we had to test every week.
Huh.
I was always
Is
negative.
That a PCR test?
It was when it first came out. So I don't
the reason
know.
I have to,
it was
PCR,
just the nasal.
PCR is, yeah. PCR is notoriously inaccurate with false positives because they amplify the sample like 40 times, you know, so they look for, you know, so there's probably every virus in the world by the time they amplify it enough times that you could test positive
it
for, and that's why they get so many positives. Okay.
It was hard to say because it was when they first came out and we did the nasal and then we did the oral swabs. And so it's negative every time, praise the God. And
yeah.
So even now I donate blood. They check for the antibodies in my blood, and it's negative.
So are they separating the blood supply between vaccine injured and DNA normal? And can you request?
That's a good question.
Can you request
non-vaccine
blood? I'm serious. This is, I asked Judy Mike if it's the same question. Is there any provision for that?
That's a good question. I'll have to.
I mean,
to
do with AIDS blood. They used to separate AIDS blood. You know, AIDS patients couldn't donate blood. So why can, of course, they're requiring people to get the spike protein shot, you know, so, but if I wanted to go, say I need a procedure and I say I want only, you know, non-spike protein infected blood,
mm-hmm.
what do I do?
Mm-hmm. That would
do
be
I donate,
my blood.
Do I donate my own in advance? Okay,
yes.
I'll take your
now
blood.
You
yeah.
can? Now,
okay.
listen, yes, you can if you know
How do you do
ahead
that?
Of time if you're going to surgery. You can.
Right.
The doctor can order it. Mm-hmm. They can put your own blood supply in case they have to use it.
Okay. Do you donate to yourself, like a blood account? And how long
Basically,
is that blood good
yes.
for?
Oh,
how long is it good
that's
for?
That's a good question. That's a good question because I don't deal with that part, that department.
Okay. We need an expert that you know that can answer these questions. So feel free to bring a friend
yes.
on. This is how we do things here. They can be anonymous too.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yes, networking,
okay.
of course.
All right. That's what it's all part of. Hey, listen, wait till we have you write a bill for medical protection. Oh, by the way, we're all becoming ministers. You know, Josie, are you a minister yet? I'm waiting for my Universal Life Church ministry certificate so I can write.
There you go.
Well, no, I'm going to write vaccine exemptions for all my friends, including myself if I need one, but I don't.
Yes.
But so we probably become. You should become a minister too, okay? Universal Life Church.
Oh, of course.
Look it up, and
I'll
that way you can you can Universal Life Church. And let me get you the website. I've got it here amongst my
did
many.
Did you send me? Did you send
because,
me a form?
Because guess what, Greg?
I did.
I'm going back to Texas, uh-huh. and I've got to get things in gear at home because I want to help. The governor, I want to help them down in Texas, and I want to help my state with all this craziness going on. I want to be able to do something and
okay.
help.
Well, tell them about us at Action Radio, because we have a bill that restores full product liability to the vaccine manufacturers. You know, we have a bill that I wrote with Zelenko that reforms the FDA so both the president and or Congress can write emergency use authorizations, and no matter what the FDA says. I mean, we've got some good stuff here. You're going to love it.
Definitely. Definitely going to do that because I've met several people in office. Dawn Buckingham is one of them, and she's very active and is – I don't believe she's vaccinated. I don't think she is because she believes mm-hmm. in protecting us and our laws and the people. She's running for right now, I believe she's running for, I can't think of it right now, but I know that she is trying to protect our borders, you know, especially with all the diseases coming in from the refugees, and I have nothing against refugee, you know, a lot of us are from the
Well, if they're real refugees, we covered that in the first hour. If you get a chance
yes,
to go back
exactly.
and when you listen
yeah.
to the podcast,
oh,
check out our first hour. Yeah.
Right.
Universal Life Church. Universal Life Church, International Headquarters, Modesto, California. The website is www.ulchq.com. That would be United
okay.
Life Church Headquarters, ulchq.com. Lovely little blue background there. And, so we're all going to be ordained ministers. So you can, in fact, if all the nurses become ordained ministers, they can write their own exemptions.
That's awesome.
Sorry.
Yes.
This is how my mind works, okay? We still got Gene on the line producing the show, and we've got Pianki who hung up. But Pianki, feel free to call back. I don't want to monopolize the whole thing. And Josie, I have to thank you so much for bringing Lita onto the show. She's amazing. And so
You're welcome.
Appreciate this. You know, nice job there. Nice
work. She sounds good on the radio.
She sounds great. I might ever doing a regular report soon. Who knows?
Well, it's funny that you say that because we do have a radio station at home.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
K99
well,
The Rock. Yeah.
That's your radio station?
It's K99.3 The Rock.
No, I know about it. It's, like I said, I don't want to identify you necessarily
if
you don't want to be.
It's from my church. I don't know what they're doing now, but because I haven't been home. So, like I said,
Tell me off the air if we can see if we can do something. Send me a friend request. I'm easy to find. There's only one Greg Penglis in the world. So, you know, and then we can chat about the radio. Because, yeah, maybe I can be on your radio show. Wouldn't that be fun? I'm looking for that.
That would be wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. Happy to do it. You know, listen, part of the deal here is that, you know, we need to share this show as much as possible to everybody and have them start sharing. And then those folks start sharing because this is a multi-million listener potential very quickly. Once people find out what we're doing and that we educate people on how to become citizen legislators, here's the biggest thing too. People are crying out for ways to help. You know, and everybody says, you got to fight. You got to fight for your freedom. And I said, well, how do you do that? I'm like, I don't know. We just have to fight for freedom. Okay, well, we've already answered that question. This is how. Okay, you learn to become a citizen legislature. You send bills to the various legislatures that you consent to be governed by. I mean, the whole point of this country is we the people, right? So, and then we're not forcing. We're not, you know, we're not in gunpoint. We're not doing anything like that. We're saying this is an alternative source of legislation to your special interests, your George Soros's, you know, your major corporations, you know, your wacko environmentalists. You know, this is an alternative. This is the source of the legislation from we the people. And every bill that comes out of this organization is guaranteed for more freedom. It is not a special. Nobody benefits individually from anything that comes out of writeyourlaws.com, our legislative website. That's the point. It's all about increasing freedom for everybody. Equal protection, 14th
exactly.
Amendment. I take that seriously. Yeah. So let's, like I say, tell me as much as you want about your radio thing, because I don't want to identify you if you don't want to be. So I always want to give that caution.
It is a Christian radio station. They speak truth. They're not very popular because they speak truth. And
tell me about it.
So
been there.
It is a small community, Brownwood, Texas. And I don't know a whole lot about it because I'm not involved in that area. I'm involved
okay.
in my part of what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's to spread truth.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to call in.
And not
as long
everybody,
as it's not during my show.
Not everybody, yeah, exactly. Not everybody likes to hear the truth.
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the tenets we go by here is that assumptions are stronger than truth, and fear creates assumptions. And so if you can spread the fear, you can put the assumptions in people's heads that hydroxychloroquine doesn't work, even though we know it does, that they'll think it's not safe, even though it's been around for 60 years, you know, and all these, and ivermectin, same thing. It's only for horses. Well, no, it's not. The horse version is for horses with the extra ingredients, but ivermectin itself is the same, whether it's, you know, in a horse pill or a person pill. I would prefer to go to the person, you know, version myself. But anyway, but the point is that it doesn't take a whole lot of research. Like I say, I spent one afternoon finding, you know, five different ways to kill viruses. And that was just me. And I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
You know, so the information's there, but you got to get the fear blocking your vision and don't live by your assumptions. Assumptions are stronger
exactly.
than truth. Yeah. Okay. Josie, is there anything else you want to cover? And like I say, Gene, feel free to jump in. I think we pretty well covered this. We got to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers
piece.
Yeah,
I got to go.
And then
I have to
do another immigration thing.
Morning.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm done for the morning. And
okay, that sounds
good. I want to thank my friend that I have invited so many nurses, but they're afraid to come forward. I said, you don't have to give your name. Just tell us the truth, what's happening.
Make up a name. I like
really,
made up names.
I really appreciate you for you to stepping up and tell us what's going on, my friend.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Anytime. And, you know, I'm preparing myself because I may not have a job, and that's okay. I'm preparing myself in different skills, and I know I will do well.
So I'm not afraid.
Well, I think you should go into broadcasting. I think you should go be a broadcaster on that Christian station myself. I think you should create a show.
Yes.
I think you should be the first citizen legislative minister broadcasting live, and I can help you do that. I'll show you what we do, and you can start it up there. You know, let's spread the word of citizen legislation. Let's empower people that they can make a difference. And here's the technology. Here's how we've got this wonderful internet and social media when we can use it. You know, we've got everything we need to have any individual create enough interest with their good idea that it could get on the president's desk, the real president, not the current occupant of the White House.
Not the clown.
Well, Lita, thanks so much for coming on. This has been wonderful to have you here. And like I say, I had a whole bunch of other stuff planned, but I don't care. I'd rather talk to you and the special folks that come on the show than go with my agenda, because I don't care. I'm the boss. I can do what I want.
Thank you for having me.
Have a blessed day.
Ciao. Thank you.
Definitely have a blessed day.
Too.
Did you want to add anything else? Or have we pretty much covered it?
No, I think I've said enough, and I've gave what I do, and I hope my testimony will be duplicated so others will do the same. And so just mind, body, spirit, you've got to have it together. You've got to be prepared before you walk out the door.
Yeah. Hey, it's on podcast. You can share it. And your podcast will be available in about half an hour. And so you'll be able to share that. And so everything's covered. And so away you go. And you don't need an invitation to call again. You can call anytime you feel like. Okay. So if you want to join our medical freedom report, starts at Thursday at 6 o'clock with another, person such as yourself, who we're not naming, because that allows them to speak freely, and feel free. And you can join anytime. So you're part of our group now. So welcome. And thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
God bless
you. God bless you too. Let's go on. I made this last night. I've been digging into the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, and I'm having much more fun with the Anti-Federalist Papers, quite frankly. So I'll play this for you. We'll be back in a few minutes, and then we've got Gene here. And Lita, of course, if you want to stay on the line, you can, and listen to what we're talking about next, but you certainly don't have to. But up to you. So let me play this, and away we go. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. The pompous, arrogant, elitist John Jay, who wrote Federalist Paper No. 5, has such complete contempt for the American people that he obviously wants to rule over the people for their own good with his strong national constitution. However, the rebuttal in Anti-Federalist No. 5 is just the opposite. It is simple, short, honest, straightforward, takes John Jay's writing head on, and makes complete hash of John Jay's weak propaganda. Anti-Federalist No. 5 was written and signed by an anonymous author known only as An Observer. Whoever it is appeals to my sense of logic and reason to take on the elitist and powerful through quiet ridicule, where you are making total fun of them, but it's not so obviously apparent to them. This is probably the easiest of my discussions of any founding document, because all I have to do is mention some select quotes to show you how An Observer turns John Jay's writing into mush. John Jay began Federalist No. 5 with the claim that the union of Scotland and England should be the model of our states, and that a letter from Queen Anne to the Scotch Parliament would be the convincing evidence. An Observer writes, "It is a certainty that when the union was the subject of debate in the Scottish legislature, some of their most sensible and disinterested nobles, as well as commoners, who were not corrupted by English gold, violently opposed the union and predicted that the people of Scotland would, in fact, derive no advantages from a consolidation of government with England, but on the contrary, they would bear a great proportion of her debt and furnish large bodies of men to assist in her wars with France, with whom, before the union, Scotland was at all times on terms of the most cordial amity. It appears quite clear that the union envisioned by John Jay is based on force and subjugation. No wonder John Jay became our first Supreme Court Chief Justice. The elites were already moving in shortly after the ratification of the Constitution. An observer further observes, it deserves also to be remembered that the people of Scotland, in the late war between France and Great Britain, petitioned to have arms and ammunition supplied them by the general government for their defense, alleging that they were incapable of defending themselves and their property from an invasion unless they were assisted by government. It is a truth that their petitions were disregarded and reasons were assigned that it would be dangerous to entrust them with the means of defense as they would then have it in their power to break the Union. This definitely portends a future U.S. where the government would have all the arms and the people defenseless, all in order that the national government remain in power. In describing this absurd example in Federalist No. 5, an observer states, from this representation of the situation of Scotland, surely no one can draw any conclusion that this country would derive happiness or security from a government which would, in reality, give the people but the mere name of being free. The last paragraph of Anti-Federalist No. 5 is so good, there is no explanation that is needed, so let me close with this from An Observer. I observe that the writer above mentioned takes great pains to show the disadvantages which would result from three or four distinct confederacies of these states. I must confess that I have not seen, in any of the pieces published against the proposed Constitution, anything which gives the most distant idea that their writers are in favor of such governments. But it is clear these objections arise from a consolidation not affording security for the liberties of their country, and from hence it must evidently appear that the design of Publius in artfully holding up to public view the bugbear of such confederacies can be with no other intention than willfully to deceive his fellow citizens. Publius is what John Jay called himself in the Federalist Papers. Going on, I am confident it must be, and that it is, the sincere wish of every true friend to the United States that there should be a confederated national government, but that it should be one which would have a control over national and external matters only, and not interfere with the internal regulations and police of the different states in the Union. Such a government, while it would give us respectability abroad, would not encroach upon or subvert our liberties at home. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from foundingfathersquotes.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. All right. We are back again. I've got Gene and Lita, our wonderful guests from the last hour, still here. So I'm going to make your line live. Again, welcome. You're welcome to stay the rest of the show, which is only about 18 minutes. So we're going to have some fun here. And so you can comment or not. You can be political or not. It's up to you. Like I say, it's pretty informal around here, but it's always interesting to have people come on with a particular expertise and then talk about something that's not a particular expertise. It gets pretty interesting sometimes. Okay. I found this from Catholic Charities of Long Island. So the title of the show today, and we covered this really in depth in the first hour, Catholic Charities and Taxpayer-Funded Illegal Alien Resettlement. It's disgusting enough to have illegal aliens coming here. It's even more disgusting to have our government open the borders to bring illegal aliens here. But what really galls me right now are these charities, these religious charities. And we went over this earlier, Catholic, Lutheran, Episcopalian, Baptist, you know, major churches in this country, Protestant churches, you know, that are forming organizations that are actually helping illegal aliens, you know, invade our country, invade our communities, you know, invade our schools and jobs and everything else like that. And it's all taxpayer funded. We're funding our own destruction. This makes no sense to me. All right. And so to have this horrendous situation, we're going to do something about it. Now, what exactly we're going to do, I don't know. I don't know if this is a legislative thing, or we go to the Congress or the states and say, look, you got to stop funding these people. Or we go to the organizations themselves and say, what the hell are you doing? Why are you doing that? Well, I know why they're doing it. Money. But, you know, maybe just highlighting on the show, we'll start the process. But let me tell you about one in particular. And again, my guests, Lita and Jean, you know, feel free to jump in. Bianca, you're welcome to call back. Josie, if you're listening, you know, feel free to call back too. But like I said, this is so underreported too. And we covered the first one with Center for Immigration Studies. Now I've gone right to the Catholic Charities themselves. And this is Catholic Charities of Long Island, which has a whole section called Immigration and Refugee Resettlement. Catholic Charities welcomes immigrants into our community. Okay, you idiots, they're not immigrants. If they're coming here across the border, you know, to sign up for welfare and take from this country, those aren't immigrants. Immigrants are invited lawfully that go to the American consulate in their country and say, I'd like to be an immigrant into the United States, please. And they give you a nice long form to fill out. And then you prove your worth and you wait, you know, 5 to 10 years, and then you might be let in. That's an immigrant. Okay. That's what my folks did. And that's how I got here. You know, I started from Canada to Australia to the United States. That was my path here. That was my pathway to citizenship, as they say. I got my citizenship at 21. I've still got the naturalization papers, you know, and here I am. Oh, boy. Yeah, thank God. But these folks, they're talking about immigrants. See, they do this. The left always does this. They blur the line so that you get confused. They start, you know, the term is illegal alien. It's not undocumented worker. First of all, they're key workers. You can't come here and work. They can't pay taxes here. Even people don't know that. Illegal aliens cannot pay taxes because you can't buy your way into citizenship or legal status if you're a criminal from another country. Okay, so you have to keep in mind all these things. These are not illegal immigrants, because an immigrant is a legal term. The left does this to confuse you. That's why I was talking to Lita earlier about vaccine injured. You know, are you vaccinated? No, I'm vaccinated. No, you're not. You're vaccine injured. I'm DNA normal. You're vaccine injured. Get it straight. Okay. I am not unmasked. I am free face. Okay. You know, I do not own an assault weapon. I have a freedom rifle. Okay. Terminology is everything. If you want to win the debate with the left, you have to change the language, because they certainly change it on you. Gun control.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. Did you have a comment? Do you want to jump in here?
No, it's called reverse engineering, basically. And I'm learning this in a sales online course I'm taking.
Uh-huh.
Do you just take like what you said and what they say and reverse it, reverse the words?
Do you have an example from your sales training, which is psychology 101? Sales training is the best.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
It's the best psychology course you'll ever take. Is corporate sales training.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, he gives examples. So I just started this online coursing because I'm going to, okay, you know, I'm a Jesus freak. So Jesus was the perfect salesman. I mean, he was the perfect at reverse engineering, putting the word.
Hey, it's Nazareth Day. Like, come on down. Jesus is selling the latest carpentry goods. You can get tables, chairs, oak, cabinets. You can get the latest furniture. It can be stained. It can be varnished, waxed, whatever you want. Welcome to Jesus Carpentry Shop. Yes, come on down for the Nazareth Day sale. How'd I do?
Yeah, he was good at that with the Pharisees, because they would say things to try to trick him with lies of their politics.
Hold on. I got to play this for you. Gene knows what's coming. During the lockdown, I got lazy, and I started making these political statements. And my favorite one, and everybody else's too, is the new normal church and grocery store. Hang on. You're going to love this. Hello, America. Looks like millions of you are in states where the governor dictator has said that food is essential, but God is not. Fortunately, we have a solution for you. We've combined your essential food shopping with a non-essential religious experience. Being in the same building and being completely intertwined, you can't do one without the other. Welcome to the New Normal Church and Grocery Store. Yes, the New Normal Church and Grocery Store is the first business of its kind to bring God conveniently into your food shopping aisle. Think of this as food for your body and food for your soul. No social distance or group size restrictions here. Upon entering the New Normal Church and Grocery Store, you will pick up your shopping cart.
You can then choose from an optional mask with a Star of David, a cross, a crescent moon, the sun for you Shintos, a statue of Buddha, and for you agnostics, a question mark. Headsets are available to play sermons throughout your shopping experience. Some of the favorites include I'm Going to Heaven and You're Not, Die Infidel Die, Oi, What Not to Say During the Bris, and That Butterfly May Be Your Grandfather. To orient you to the store, the Kosher Jewish Deli is by the Western Wall. A simple shalom gets you service, but be prepared to haggle. For you Muslims, out of courtesy, we put the halal butcher by the Eastern Wall. Sharia store policies require the wearing of both a burqa and a mask, just to be safe. Protestants will find the Wonder Bread, hot dogs, and steak in the central aisles, where all the best-dressed customers can also be found. When you notice the smell of incense, you are nearing the Buddhist section, which is all vegetarian. For Catholics, communion is available in the bakery department by the wafers near the red wine section. Agnostics should go directly to customer service because you folks have no idea what you want anyway. Be sure to offer your confessional to the checker on the way out if you so choose. Please don't forget to first pull down the blind on the plexiglass screen. And if you require ministering, you can talk to your bagger as they push your groceries to your car because all our baggers are cross-trained in theology. The new normal church and grocery store, your combination alternative to the separation of church by the state. See what happens when I get locked down? I get creative. What do you think?
That's hilarious.
I do have
and
my
so
moment.
True,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, and you can get a copy. That's on our Action Radio YouTube channel. I forgot which one exactly, but I'll post it to the Action Radio group, which is our Facebook page, is our public page, and also on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis page. And so those are public. My personal page is not public anymore because I had too many trolls trying to cancel me. And once I purged it of liberals and made it for friends only, I had no trouble ever since. All right, let's get back to this the seriousness here. We've got about 10 minutes left. Catholic Charities of Long Island, Immigration and Refugee Resettlement. Catholic Charities welcomes immigrants into their community, providing the guidance and assistance necessary to stabilize their situations, achieve self-sufficiency as quickly as possible. Okay, I don't believe that. I don't believe they're self-sufficient at all, because when they're self-sufficient, Catholic Charities isn't making money from us, the taxpayer, or that we, the taxpayer. It's the services provided. We provide services in 7 languages through 4 distinct program units. Isn't that special? Here's the fun one. Legal counseling. Comprehensive, reliable legal counseling is the backbone of our immigrant services, helping newcomers negotiate complex and ever-changing immigration and naturalization laws. In other words, how to get around them. Okay. Catholic Charities is the only agency on Long Island fully recognized by the U.S. government. Why are they fully recognized by the U.S. government? And that's the Board of Immigration Appeals, to offer legal advice, process petitions, and represent clients on immigration law matters up to the Executive Office for Immigration Review, the EOIR, U.S. Department of Justice, Board of Immigration Appeals. So in other words, you can get a taxpayer-funded Catholic Charities lawyer to usher you through the process of getting around your immigration laws, because that way they can make you a citizen, and away you go. And of course, they get money for that. I'm disgusted. Gene, feel free to come in here anytime, because they're not hiding it. They're not doing anything. It's just right here on the open, you know. And I post this on my Facebook page too, and I think I put it on the Action Radio group page too. But anyway, I will if I haven't. It says our counselors currently handle more than 9,000 active cases, and this is just Long Island, folks. 9,000 active cases, including adjustments of immigration status, family reunification, work authorizations for people that can't be here. I added that political asylum, visa extensions. Oh, there you go. That's how you stay longer. And citizenship applications. They also offer legal assistance to victims of human trafficking. Well, that's a good thing. And immigrant victims of various crimes, including domestic violence. Gene, welcome back. What do you think?
Yeah, it's always follow the money. Very sad. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So they're not. They don't care who they bring over. It's just what do they get the money for?
Mm-hmm. And as long as they keep bringing more people, they get more money. And once they're self-sufficient, they need more people to keep that money coming in, because self-sufficient people, you know, aren't being paid for by our tax dollars to Catholic Charities. And this isn't the only one. This is just the example. It's not the only Catholic charity. It's certainly not the only religious organization doing that. And here's the big one: refugee resettlement in partnership with the U.S. government. Why is Catholic Charities in partnership with the U.S.? Why wasn't the U.S. government in partnership with the American people? Hello. In partnership with the U.S. government, the U.S. Catholic bishops, and New York State, refugee resettlement staff reach out to people who arrive on Long Island fleeing war, natural disaster, or personal persecution in their countries of origin. Full-range case management services help these most vulnerable newcomers get a nice big house on Long Island. No, that's me. To stabilize their lives by securing food, clothing, housing, healthcare, English language instruction, and employment services. Wow, this is like a one-stop shop. This isn't bad. I didn't get this when I came here. Of course, I'm a white guy, right? I came from Australia. You know, I wasn't persecuted there. But think about that. You know, those of us not – this is where I need Josie back on the show. Those of us immigrants who didn't get any of this stuff for various reasons, it's quite fascinating, the discrimination of immigration. If you're a refugee, you get all this stuff, even if you're not really a refugee. If you're running across the border, you get all this stuff. If you're a white guy from Australia, you don't get all this stuff. Fascinating. All right, let me see if we got about 6 minutes left. Lita, do you have a, a further comment on this? This really disgusting example of what's going on in our country? Well, because you know, as a self-avowed Jesus freak, what do you think of churches that are doing this, that are partaking of business, of taking tax dollars to bring in people that have no right to be here?
Well, the question is, what is their underlying factor? Are they truly doing it to help people? Or are they truly doing it to gain from this opportunity to get money? And so really and truly, if we're going to have people here coming, they need to be citizens and work and pay taxes. And so we have enough issues and problems of our own within our own country, of our own people. Drugs. I mean, I'm here. I see the homeless a lot. I see a lot of people taking advantage of Social Security and getting on these disability things, getting a free check, and still out on the streets trying to collect money or whatever, pretending they're homeless when they're not. I've spent time in these homeless, in the homeless shelters and soup kitchens, and help feed them, and I listen and I observe. And so there's so much brokenness in our own country to allow thousands and thousands of immigrants to just come in at knowingly. No, they're not screened for, or they may be screened. I don't know. Who knows? We don't know what the truth is anymore. And so I feel like I have met a family, and they from Honduras, and they are very sweet. Good people. The sadness part of me felt like, oh, you've come to America. There's sweet innocence in them still, but yet here we are corrupted. And I don't think they're getting those benefits because right away one of them's working in a restaurant, working, and the children, they don't have very good clothes that fit them, and you can tell that they're poor, but they do have some shelter. And so my heart goes to those like that, and I feel like, well, if they want to come here, they need to work and they need to pay taxes.
Well, I want to sort of focus on that a little bit, because illegal aliens come here and they pay taxes and they think that's a way they can buy their way into permanent status. And the IRS maintains that with what's called the ITIN, the Individual Tax Identification Number. It's the number they came up with to take taxes from illegal aliens who are working here. Well, first of all, illegal aliens cannot pay taxes, because there's no jurisdiction for them here. They are not citizens of the United States. They're not permanent residents. They're not on a visa. They have no ability to work here legally. They have no ability to pay taxes here legally. So, you know, the idea that, you know, if you pay taxes, they're going to stay. Okay. The whole basis of the Plyler v. Doe education case, that where the Supreme Court said that we have to educate illegal alien kids here because we have to prepare them for life as an adult. No, we don't. We're not here to prepare them for life as an adult. We're here to have their parents take them back home. If they want to come here legally, we know the process, you know, consulate, papers, things like that. So there's this kind of a myth here. And the other thing that a lot of people, I think, are mistaken is that there is no choice. It's like, come to America for a better life, and that's it. And if we take them away from here, they're never going to have a better life. I think that, and I talked about this on an earlier show, that if Donald Trump, you know, went to the president of El Salvador, for example, it's a fairly small, manageable country that we could do a lot of good with. If he got the investment there, you know, anything like that. He got the investment here by opening up factories and lowering the taxes and getting rid of the stupid regulations, and the businesses flooded in and having the multi-billion, you know, tariffs on China to stop exploiting us and getting cheap stuff, you know, from China. You know, you can take a country like El Salvador or Honduras or Guatemala, and again, freedom and free markets could make them just as prosperous and actually more prosperous in the United States, because we're heading for Marxism right now. So if they actually had a free enterprise country like Costa Rica, for example, you don't see people running here from Costa Rica. Why? Because it's a, for the most part, a free market, you know, free country. You know, free markets and free laws. Okay, so if Costa Rica can do it, why can't Nicaragua do it? Well, they're communist now, but they don't have to be. Okay, Cuba doesn't
exactly.
have to be. Okay, Honduras, you know, Guatemala, the triangle countries, El Salvador. There's no reason for them. There's no reason for caravans to come there to here when we could take their country. In fact, the president of El Salvador, he doesn't want the person drained. Because every citizen that comes from one of these countries to here is one less productive citizen for them. Okay, they are losing
exactly.
their people.
Exactly, but it starts from the top, from leadership. And how do you change mm-hmm. that?
Citizen legislation. So, let's go back to Action Radio.
Yeah.
We make bills that we write bills that are so popular they can't help it. If we have a bill that eliminates foreign aid, I'll tell you just one example. It's not related to immigration. I haven't written my big immigration bill yet, but I will. But do we have a bill, very simply, that says that there is no withholding of your federal – I've got a minute left. There's no federal income tax withholding during the time you're earning your standard deduction, okay? Very simple bill. So you get your full paycheck until you've earned your standard deduction, whatever it is for that year, and then they start withholding money. Why? Because that money's not being taxed anyway. So why should you have to wait a year to get it back when you can get it this year? So if people work the first, you know, 3 to 4 months of the year, however long it takes them to earn $12,500 or $13,000 or whatever the standard deduction is this year, that money's not taxed. There's no federal income tax on that because there's no federal income tax on that anyway. It's your standard deduction, right? So there's a simple practical bill that helps working families. So it's got Democrat, you know, stuff written all over it. It's also a tax cut, so the Republicans will like it. You know, that's the kind of basic bill that helps everybody. And when we do immigration bills, same thing. I'd love to do a freedom. I got 10 seconds left. How do I put this? You know, freedom and free market aid act to these different countries. Maybe you and I can work on it. We'll talk.
Yes, it sounds yeah. perfect. Yes.
Lena,
now
we're literally out of time.
Those that truly want to, they don't belong
yeah.
here. And they need to stay in their country. Like I said, there's an innocence to them still, that this family mm-hmm. I met. However, I'm sure there's a bunch of criminals too.
I really have to hold you up. We really are out of time. But let's work on the free market and freedom bill, you know, freedom foreign aid bill or something like that, where we, in other words, people don't, you know, they don't come here for a better life. We make a better life there. All right, got to go.
Yes.
Lita, thank you so much, Jean,
okay,
Bianchi, Josie, everybody. And we'll talk more. Greg Benglis for Action Radio. blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock in the morning. 6 o'clock in the morning Central Time. We're an hour earlier. Thank you.